This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Everyone, this is The Other Side of Midnight. Welcome to the start of a brand new week. Happy Monday. Thanks for starting your Monday with me. Hopefully you had a nice weekend, and hopefully you get a couple days off this week for the Thanksgiving holiday. I am not going to be here on Friday. That's the only day that I'm off, but I'll be here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and yes, even Thursday on Thanksgiving morning. From what I'm told, the gentleman that you just heard, Curtis Sliwa, will be here on Friday. Now, I also heard him just now talking about the how he's filling in on the morning show that day. I don't know how he's going to do that, but if anybody can, he can. I mean, that's 8 hours straight of radio. I hope somebody realizes that when they invited him to... Oh, actually, I guess he gets the 5 a.m. as a break. But I hope somebody is aware that he's going to be doing 8 out of 9 hours straight on radio. But if anybody can do it, Curtis can. I do have to say, it is great to have Curtis back on the station. And I remarked last week how I've never seen anybody leave the studio in the kind of condition that Curtis does. Today actually is a lot neater. It's a lot cleaner. I do have to say, and look, this is nothing I haven't said before, Curtis does smell. I mean, there is some weird smell that he's got to him. It's not exactly BO, but it's far from pleasant. It's like this staleness. It smells like staleness. If a human could smell like a musty smell, that's the smell that surrounds the aura of Curtis. But on to more pressing matters. It's funny. I try to be fairly well prepared for this show. I try to read about the articles that I'm going to talk about. I try to do additional research based on each of the subjects that I'm going to talk about. But for the first time in a while, I am going to talk about an article. I'm going to talk about a story in the news that I have not read. Okay? Now, I'm always cautioning you on Facebook, especially. Facebook is the worst offender, but even Twitter. Facebook and social media in general. I cannot stand when people comment on social media based only on a headline and not on the substance of what's in the article. Yet, I'm about to do that. You know why? Because I saw this headline, and I said to myself, there is no way that I can read this article without going absolutely crazy. There's no way that, and I don't really want to be angry for most of the weekend, and I know that I can at best handle one reading of this article. So I said, let me just read it on air because I know this is going to drive me nuts. You remember the Astro World tragedy, right? In Texas. This is a horrible, horrible situation. People died. The performers kept on performing. I mean, it was horrible. Everything about it. It was a concert from hell. This fellow, Travis Scott, who seems like a real winner, kept on performing even as people were being trampled. And then he goes out afterwards, not to visit the victims, not to put out a statement of concern. The guy goes to Dave & Buster's, like a sports bar, afterwards. I mean, it's the concert promoters ought to be ashamed of themselves. The performers ought to be ashamed of themselves. It was just a horrible, horrible incident. Who's to blame for it? Well, according to this headline, we now know who's to blame for this. It is not Travis Scott, the performer. But at least according to Public Enemy frontman Chuck D, the people responsible are old white men. Yes, that's right. You're wondering who to blame for the Astroworld tragedy. It is old white men. And in the he wrote on Instagram this. I'm tired of these corporations shucking their most crucial responsibility. These folks simply say rest in peace and move on. This negligence can't continue. Folks want answers. I'm not buying the young black man did it. He's being blamed for a crime while the old white men running the corporations that Travis and his fans trusted with their lives stay quiet in the shadows, counting their money and watching their stock prices go up and up. Now, I am not at all excusing the promoters of this concert from some culpability here. I think they have a great deal of culpability. But for Chuck D of Public Enemy to, on the one hand, completely absolve Travis Scott for doing anything wrong here, and at the other hand, make this immediately a racial issue, it tells you a lot about how Chuck D views the world. Like a lot of people out there, Chuck D, who's, if you're not into hip hop music, is a rapper. Chuck D views everything clearly through racial lines. Something went wrong. Old white people did it. Old white men specifically. Old white men. Give me a break. What baloney. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Now, Travis Scott has issued a few statements of apology, including a highly criticized black and white video where he shares, I'm honestly just devastated. I could never imagine anything like this just happening. So I think this is, again, Live Nation is the concert promoter. I agree with Chuck D that they deserve to some blame here. I think it's crazy that he's immediately asserting the old white men boogeyman here. That's my view. Tell me what you think. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-WABC. Chuck D quickly reverting back to blasting the white guys at the top as he went after the Live Nation president and CEO, Michael Rapinoe. So this is what he said. So I'm calling on Michael Rapinoe's entire team at Live Nation and a consortium of all the major concert promoters out there to do the right thing, to step up and step out of the shadows to fix these situations and save lives, to stop letting one young black man take the blame, the hate, the fall. We don't know everything that happened or exactly what failed, but concert promoters have all the power to make the changes to keep everyone safe and alive. Again, I don't disagree with the gist of what he said there. My issue with what he's saying is blaming old white men. Well, I mean, okay, does Michael Rapinoe deserve some blame? Sure. But does he need to be called out for being, I don't even know if he is old, but does he deserve to be specifically called out for being old and white and male? I mean, there was a time when certain people claimed to want equality and to want to be judged just like everybody else. Don't you think blaming someone by calling out their gender, their race, and their age is exactly the opposite of the direction that we need to go? So he went on to say, Live Nation, your stock is up. The white corporate music biz keeps cashing in on black pain, trauma, and death. This has to stop yesterday. You're part of the problem. Grow the F up, fix this, and let us all live in peace. Now, you have a problem with white people running concert venues like Live Nation? Do you know who you should take issue with? Again, Travis Scott and Drake. They're choosing to work for these white people. They're choosing to be part of this vicious cycle that Chuck D thinks is going on. 800-848-WABC. Comment as you see fit. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let me begin with Amir in Boston. Hello, Amir. Amir, I got you.
Yeah, okay. First of all, let me say, I do respect you because you're a real intellect. But here's the problem. For this man to say, of course, he's a knucklehead, right? Now, if he ran for president, of course, you wouldn't vote for him, would you?
Who? I would vote for Chuck D.
Yeah, if he ran for president, you wouldn't vote for him. He's a knucklehead. You already proved that, correct?
I proved that I would vote for Chuck D.
No, I say you wouldn't vote for him because this man is a knucklehead. Are we in agreement with that?
I mean, obviously, it would depend on who he's running against, but I can't imagine a scenario that I would vote for him.
A statement like this, I mean, he's a Neanderthal, and I don't put Neanderthals down. This is ridiculous what he said. But the reason why I call you a hypocrite, with respect, though.
Thank you.
We had a man who said after 9/11, thousands of Muslims went out in unison. They were so happy 9/11 happened. And we say, wait a minute. You say they saw the video. What video? Did he change it? No, I read the article. There was no such article, and we know who that was. So let's, you know.
So because I voted for Donald Trump, I can't say that Chuck D is in error by calling out old white men.
You can say that.
Thank you.
You can say that, but you have to be consistent because, unless I'm wrong, did you criticize Donald Trump for doing that, which is very dangerous?
Yes, I did. Absolutely.
Well, I didn't hear that, to be honest with you.
All right. Well, I can't speak to what you heard, Amir, but I could tell you look, I was in New York after September 11th. I was downtown days after the tragedy, and I didn't see any Muslims celebrating, and I was watching a lot of local media, and I don't recall that either.
And even Fox News took him challenge for that. And he said, he said, I saw in a video. Then I said, I read an article. It was bull. We all know that. And he's running for president. That's a dangerous thing to do.
Right. But see,
you know that.
But you're bringing up comments that Donald Trump made 5 years ago. What I'm talking about, a comment that Chuck D made yesterday. I mean, generally, I do generally tend to comment on, you know, comments that are made in the present. So if Donald Trump says something stupid tomorrow, I'm happy to criticize him for that, too.
That's true. But when I hear you say that, I'm like, wait a minute. What about this guy? What is so controversial and so hurtful? Now, listen, I'm Muslim, but I'm agnostic. But yeah, if it was of Jewish faith, Buddhist, whatever, to me, that's like, it's so irresponsible, you know?
I don't disagree with you, Amir. First of all, we're all a little bit hypocritical. Hypocrisy is the tribute that vice pays to virtue. And if you're going to look for holes in my consistency, you will find many. I am somebody that is completely inconsistent on a wide variety of things. I don't expect to be judged as a candidate for sainthood. I don't expect to be judged as anything. I'm just trying to give you my 2 cents on what's happening in the world at large here. 800-848-WABC. Your thoughts on Chuck D claiming that the people responsible for this Astro World tragedy are old white men. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Ralph in New Jersey. Hello, Ralph.
Well, you know, when you talk about Chuck D, it's no different from LeBron James or Joy Reid. It speaks volume about the content of their character. Wasn't it Dr. King who said, "We aspire for a colorblind society, so we must all judge by the content of character."
I just said that, Ralph.
Thank you.
I just said that. Absolutely. This is the opposite. We are going backwards in this country on race relations. And the fact that Chuck D can't simply criticize Live Nation as a company or Michael Rapino as an individual and that he has to say, oh, it's the old white men. It's the old white men exploiting black people that are responsible for this tragedy in Astroworld. Give me a break. Come on. You have to make everything about race, number one. Clearly, I don't remember him having a problem with Live Nation exploiting Chuck D before this tragedy. Why was it okay for poor Travis Scott, Chuck D a second ago, poor Travis Scott in Chuck D's world to be exploited by Live Nation, But when it comes time to assign culpability here, he's choosing to squarely blame the old white people. 800-848-9222. I think it says a lot about how he views the world. I think it says a lot about where we are as a country. And I don't understand how you excuse Travis Scott continuing to play for 45 minutes while people are being trampled to death in front of him. Hundreds of people are being hurt. And the guy chooses to go to Dave and Buster's afterwards. I mean, how about, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy to me. 800-848-9222. If you want to comment, that's 800-848-WABC. Frank Moreno here with you until 5 o'clock this morning, when we'll take you to the WABC Early News with Juliet Huddy and me. We've got a ton of interesting news coming your way today. That's 800-848-9222 on Twitter as well, at Frank Moreno. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. Let me say hello to Paul on Staten Island. Hello, Paul.
Hey, Frank, how are you?
I'm hanging in there, Paul. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm working as usual. I was listening to the Chuck D thing, and, you know, it's okay for them to make the money they make, though, with Live Nation, but the second something happens,
right,
they want to blame them.
It's
a little pot calling the kettle black, don't you think?
Yeah, well, so pardon the pun there. Yeah, it's absurd. It's absurd. It's,
yeah,
it's fine to take the white guy's money when things are going well,
exactly,
but when things go poorly, I don't know, it couldn't have been the young black man, to use Chuck D's words, that did anything wrong. It had to be the old white men and their exploitive nature and how they do things.
Exactly. It just shows that another ignorant racist that's out there now. I mean, he showed his true colors. That's exactly what that is.
Yeah, look.
Can't be anything other.
Chuck D and Public Enemy have a long history of racially inflammatory rhetoric, and I'm not sure why that's okay, right? I recognize that historically in this country, black people have been given a raw deal, to say the least. They've been mistreated severely, slavery, yeah, and everything else, Jim Crow, horrible. But I'm not sure why racism is okay if it comes from black people. In my view, racism's not okay when it comes from anybody. And this, to me,
it's not okay at all.
This, to me, is racism.
I'm sorry, Frank. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was done. Go ahead.
Well, it's the media is separating us. I work East New York, and, you know, I stop in the bodegas while I'm working. You know, predominantly black neighborhoods, Spanish neighborhoods, and there's no racial bias anywhere. I mean, I get love for anybody I talk to in the stores. People just strike up conversations out of nowhere. There's, from where I work and when I'm driving around, I don't see any bias. It's the media and the government trying to separate the people so they could take control. That's basically what's going on. Then you got, you know, idiots like Chuck D just spilling rhetoric. You know, it's all of this is trying to keep us apart.
Yeah, that's
right,
Paul.
And they like that when you're out in the streets.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Paul. Thank you for the call. Good luck at
you're
work
welcome.
Today. What field are you in again? What kind of work do you do?
Private sanitation.
Oh, very nice. Very, very nice. You're doing the hard work out there, especially as it gets into the colder months. Thank you, Paul.
I'm in Kings Plaza right now. I took a break.
Excellent. Excellent. Enjoy that break. Thanks for calling.
All right, brother. Take care.
800-848-WABC. Patrick is on Long Island. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, Frank. Great talking to you for the first time. Been listening for quite a while.
Oh, that's nice of you. Thank you. I'm glad you took the plunge and decided to call.
Yeah. As far as this Travis situation is concerned, I think if more people had that much energy to go out like in mass there and worship him, they could probably be better off in church, because probably would have been better for their souls as well. But anyway, I think that this racism should stop. It's this seems to be in vogue to be criticizing or bias against white males, which I am a part of that group, and I find it very offensive.
Well, and I don't blame you, and I thank you for the call, Patrick. Thanks for listening as well. You said these people might have been better off in church. I guess you could always say people would be better off in XYZ situation, but these people just wanted to go to a concert and have a good time. They didn't expect to be trampled to death. And that's really where our focus should be, is in preventing this, making sure this doesn't happen in the future. And I don't understand why everything needs to be a racial issue. I cannot understand it for the life of me. Well, here's something that does not need to be a racial issue, and that is the need for better digestive health. Because whatever we look like on the outside, on the inside, we all look the same. And we all need better gut health, and that is where Life Change Tea comes in. You know, I had a great weekend, got a lot done, got to relax a little bit, got to connect with some friends and some family. The one thing that I failed to do is make a new batch of Life Change Tea. And I was kicking myself as I was driving here. Because when you drink two glasses of Life Change Tea, you have such an energy. You have such a spring in your step. You have such a get up and go. And when you don't have Life Change Tea, especially if you've been accustomed to it, it's like your get up and go has gone up and went. Life Change Tea gives you a ton of energy without caffeine. It keeps your digestive system flowing. You will stay regular. It is a phenomenal, phenomenal product. We put all this junk into our bodies, and this goes a long way towards filtering it all out. It's a gentle daily cleanse that tastes great and works to get things moving. So if you want to try it, it's only available at GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Use the promo code Frank when you order. If you do that, you will get to enjoy free shipping anywhere in these United States. GetTheTea.com, promo code Frank. GetTheTea.com, promo code Frank. It is a great product, and if you use my promo code, it's a great price.
Frank Morano.
In this dirty old part of the city, where the sun refused to shine, people tell me there ain't no use in trying. Now, my girl, you're so young and pretty, and one thing I know is true, you'll be dead before your time is due.
Other side of midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Hey, we are following a developing story out of the Dairyland state, the state of Wisconsin. I believe the community is Waukesha, Wisconsin. An SUV plowed into a holiday parade, killing five people and injuring more than 40 others. There's a lot of video of this incident that's been posted on social media and elsewhere. And you see this red SUV speeding around the parade marchers and eventually hitting a whole bunch of the participants. Now, what they are saying, according to the police chief, Dan Thompson, the SUV has been located and a person of interest was in custody. Now, that's good news. A law enforcement official that's familiar with early findings of the investigation told CBS News it appeared the suspect was fleeing another scene, possibly a knife fight, when he ran into the people at the parade, and the incident did not appear to be an act of terrorism. That, I suppose, is a relief as well, although if you're one of the 40 or so people that are injured or one of the five people that are dead, you're still dead. I mean, it doesn't bring you any solace, doesn't bring your family any solace. Oh, the person that ran my loved one over was fleeing a knife fight and is not there to wage jihad. So I imagine we're going to hear some more details about this. Look, I don't think I'm the only one that as soon as I saw that this was Wisconsin, I thought this might be some reaction to the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict. That was not mentioned as a motive by the police chief yesterday, but I imagine we're going to hear a lot more about this. And we've seen similar terrorist incidents like this before. So you do think Islamic terrorism from time to time as well, because we have seen a movement towards, instead of trying to blow up subways, instead of trying to fly planes into buildings, we've seen more and more a focus on these so-called soft targets and taking things that we see every day, in this instance, an SUV, and turning them into weapons. So if there's more news on it, we'll tell you about it. But that is the latest. Five people dead, more than 40 injured. I did also wonder, look, there's a lot of nutty people out there. And a lot of people get upset when you say holiday anything instead of Christmas. So it did cross my mind. And this is not a joke. This is not shtick. It did cross my mind. Did someone take this truck and ram into these people because they were calling it a holiday parade instead of a Christmas parade? Now, that's a little extreme. And I do see some media outlets reporting it as a Christmas parade, others reporting it as a holiday parade. I don't know what the organizers of the parade itself called it, but that's that. Speaking of the Rittenhouse verdict, you will recall, if you listen to this show regularly, that I, on whatever day Rittenhouse testified, I told you that there was no way that this was going to end in a conviction on the murder charges. I told you there was no way. I said this was either going to be a mistrial or an acquittal. And sure enough, it was indeed an acquittal on everything. Now, the one thing that I did think that there was an opportunity to have a conviction on was the gun charge, but then the judge threw out the gun charge before the jury even got to weigh in on that. It had to do with the size of the barrel and so forth. Now, that's that. So this did not come as a surprise to me, and I am not a lawyer. I don't pretend to be a legal expert, but I do think that, I mean, I've watched a lot of cases before, and I do think that I know a thing or two about trials. So many of the legal experts predicted that we were not going to have a conviction here. It really should not have been a surprise to anybody. And yet, I have to tell you, I was really fed up, and this is not the first time, with the people around the country that have a problem with this verdict. Now, look, we can all disagree with jury verdicts. I've disagreed with my fair share. But Bill de Blasio tweeted out on Friday afternoon, "This verdict is disgusting." And we saw similar statements from so many people, but especially leading Democratic politicians around the country, that I really feel it undermines the entire criminal justice system. And I am not saying that I'm not trying to be hyperbolic here, but we have a system of laws in this country. We have a process, and a big part of that process is trial by jury. And a big part of that is trusting that there are fair trials. And the fact that the mayor and people like the public advocate and the man who would like to be the next governor, Jumaane Williams, the fact that even I think Governor Hochul said something, the fact that they felt the need to try and push their thumb down on the levers of justice during the trial, and then they needed to undermine people's faith in the verdict after it happened, that's outrageous. And, you know, I didn't think it was appropriate when Donald Trump called into question the results of the election, because the election's done. We have a process for elections. We have a process for challenges. We have a process for counting votes. And we went through that process and we got a winner. We have a process for criminal cases. So what are we just supposed to do? Is just not do away with trial by jury and have instead trial by Bill de Blasio? The governor of Wisconsin, Tony Evers, said Friday, "No ruling today changes our reality in Wisconsin that we have to have work to do towards equity, accountability, and justice that communities across our state are demanding and deserve." Now, that's fine, but that doesn't say anything. It doesn't say anything. The fact that 12 citizens resisted enormous pressure to deliver a politically charged verdict and instead delivered a verdict based on the overwhelming evidence, that shows the system works. So I have such an issue with these people who are calling publicly into question the verdict of the jury. Why have juries then? Why have juries? We're just going to go with whatever verdict Bill de Blasio wants? Come on. Come on. You didn't agree. You know who I thought was very responsible? In the aftermath of the OJ verdict, which was just as polarizing as this one was, if not more so, and that did have the country significantly divided along racial lines, you know whose statement I really respected? Bill Clinton. And I'm not looking this up, but I seem to remember it about 30 years later. He said something to the effect of, first of all, he didn't feel the need to weigh in during the trial, as President Biden did in the case of the Rittenhouse trial, because he recognized, one, that would be politically polarizing. Two, it's not the right thing for the president to be weighing in on something that's supposed to be an independent enterprise here. So what Bill Clinton said afterwards was, whatever our opinion of the verdict is, we have to accept it and move on. And something along the lines of, we need to heal as a nation. And that's what was missing from all these leaders and wannabe leaders. That's the statement I would have loved to hear from Joe Biden, Bill de Blasio, Kathy Hochul, Jumaane Williams. All right. You didn't agree with the verdict. Sometimes maybe the juries get it wrong. That's what you say. But there's no need for you to call it disgusting. There's no need for you to continue to undermine people's faith in the jury system. Because you know what that also leads to? And I'm serious about this. That leads to people refusing to show up for jury duty. Because if you are someone that believes Rittenhouse was guilty, you're going to be in a position now. Well, you know, Bill de Blasio and others said the verdict was disgusting. 800-848-WABC. If you want to comment, that's 1-800-848-WABC. Now, as negative as I find that, I find even more disgusting some of the angry mobs that have emerged in the aftermath of this whole thing. Law enforcement in Portland, Oregon, declared a riot Friday night as about 200 demonstrators protested the acquittal of Kyle Rittenhouse. The protesters were breaking windows, throwing objects at police, and talking about burning down a local government building in downtown Portland. That is the word from the county sheriff's office. The Portland Police Bureau said several people were given citation, but only one person who had an outstanding warrant from another matter was arrested. These protesters, they're not protesters, most of them, the ones that are doing this kind of thing, they're rioters. The writers. Once you start breaking things, you cross the line from protest, which I'm all for, to vandalism and being a rioter. The protesters gathered following the acquittal of Kyle Rittenhouse, and they were clearly not happy. Protests were held in several other cities on going into Saturday. And again, I'm all for it. You want to protest the verdict? Protest the verdict. In New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, 1,000 people marched through downtown Chicago on Saturday afternoon, organized by Black Lives Matter and other local activist groups. According to the Chicago Tribune, protesters held signs that stated, "Stop white supremacy," and "We're hitting the streets to protest this racist injustice system." I hate to say the kind of things that everybody says, but I really wish that these people would protest and get as upset about the level of gun violence in cities like Chicago that we're seeing. It seems like there's no protest for that. Certainly not protests where 1,000 people are willing to show up. And I can't help but think that there's a little bit of hypocrisy there. Now, as I said before, maybe there's hypocrisy to everything. And in New York, you saw these rioters wreak havoc in Queens, in the Queens neighborhood of Middle Village. Councilman Mayor-elect Eric Adams, good for him, condemned this angry mob. He said it's one thing to protest at any elected official's office, but to come to a neighborhood and openly destroy property, be disruptive, and throw objects at the residents of the neighborhood, that's unacceptable in our city. Eric Adams said that Saturday at a news conference in Middle Village. He's exactly right. He was joined by Councilman Bob Holden, who represents that area, and the city council does a great job. So there were 40 masked rebel rousers terrorizing the neighborhood by destroying cars, destroying American flags, and attacking a cop. Now, 5 people were arrested and charged with rioting, and I'm not going to say their names, but one of these guys was caught with a hatchet and a hammer, and he's facing additional charges of criminal possession of a weapon. Adams, Mayor-elect Adams, according to Holden, called to arrange the news conference, offering us a little bit of a glimpse on how different his administration will be on this stuff as compared to Bill de Blasio. I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. This is crazy. This is crazy. 800-848-9222. And it is interesting. You have a situation where Bill de Blasio tweets, this is disgusting, this is that. He goes on a Twitter rampage talking about how horrible this is. And the next day, people are destroying property in one of the most pro-cop neighborhoods in New York City. See, that's what I'm saying about elected officials not playing a healing role here. Bill de Blasio chose to appeal to the lowest common denominator, and then we saw what happened. The lowest common denominator showed up. These 5 hooligans went out and started rioting and breaking stuff. Now, what if Bill de Blasio, let's play pretend here. What if Mayor de Blasio had instead said, I don't like the verdict. I don't agree with the verdict. But as Americans, we all have to accept it and move on. That's our system. Instead of throwing some gasoline on the fire, he could have been a calming influence. But Mayor de Blasio, again, chose to take the low road. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Now, Eric Adams put out a statement calling for stronger gun laws. Fine. You want to make a case for policy changes as a result of this? Fine. What it's not responsible to do is use the kind of rhetoric that Bill de Blasio did when you know there are communities in this country and in this city that are already a powder keg. And de Blasio chose to take the low road, and Eric Adams, so far, has chosen to take the high road by calling out these rioters. And I hope we see a lot more of this. You want to comment? You're welcome to. 800-848-9222. Let me begin with John in Bayonne. Hey, John.
Hi, Frank. I'm curious to find out how this became a racial trial. Why is there racism in this trial?
Well, I think it's absurd, right?
Everyone involved was white.
Yeah, I guess because the initial spark was the Jacob Blake incident, and because Jacob Blake happened to be black. But I agree with you. I don't think it should be a racial issue.
It has nothing to do with that. This is a totally different situation.
Well,
Kyle Rittenhouse shot 2 people. You know, he was defending himself, and he had killed 2 people that happened to be white, and he shot another guy that was white, and two people that he shot and killed. Why was a child molester? Why did he have a gun on him anyway?
Yeah, that's a fair question.
I think before this trial started, how many people out there, and still to this day, think that Kyle Rittenhouse killed two black people?
Yeah.
I really wonder that.
That's a fine point. Yeah, go ahead, John.
You keep saying that you're okay with protesting. You know, I'm really not, because Article 3 of the Constitution says it gives the right for people to peacefully to assemble, not to violently protest.
Well, that,
or even protest. The word protest is not in the Constitution. It's peacefully to assemble. That's what people have the right to do, not to march up and down the street like Jesse Jackson the other day calling for, you know, communism in the country. That wasn't peaceful.
Yeah, and it's the First Amendment, not Article 3. But we part company there. You have an issue with protesting. I don't. I don't care if you want to shout in the streets from morning until night Frank Morano's a jerk. I have protesters that protest outside of my house, you know, and you know what I say? That's America. God bless you. But once you start breaking things, once you start attacking a cop, once you start destroying property, then that's not protesting. That it's not peaceful assembly, which I view peaceful assembly as another word for protesting. That's rioting. That's vandalism. It's destruction. It's law breaking. 800-848-WABC. Timothy is in Nassau County. Hello, Timothy.
Hi, Frank. Yeah, as far as Mayor de Blasio's remarks, it's obviously very irresponsible, to say the least. Yes, they did protest and damage things. I mean, broke things down and so on.
Right, attacked.
And they also carry socialist and revolutionary signs, by the way. He is a Marxist himself. He studied in Cuba with his wife. He brought Marxism to New York City. And this is what he's promoting. Just, I'm glad the other caller mentioned that about communism. This is what this is all about. That's why you have people going out there trying to defend a country. You know, this is what we're dealing with today. So it's reprehensible. As far as you having to put up with it, I don't think that should be. People, you know, protesting is one thing, but yelling outside your house and everything, I call the cops on. That's to serve in the peace and your peace.
Well,
I have the right to do that.
Yeah, it is what it is. I don't mind. 800-848-WABC. I'm a free speech advocate, and I'm in the free speech business. Audrey's in Brooklyn. Hello, Audrey.
Good morning, Frank. Thank you for taking my call, and I'm sure you're getting ready for the baby that's going to be the light of your life. But I have a comment in regards to the gentleman asked why was the Rittenhouse trial racist. I didn't see it like that. I saw it as a trial that this young man was going to get off, and I wasn't surprised because the judge sort of surprised me. But it is what it is. As far as Chuck D, hell with him. He's no big deal. He's just one of the ones. I did tours with Run DMC when rap wasn't all about the let's get the money.
Love Run DMC. So, love Run DMC. He's the greatest.
And the Fat Boys, whole bunch. But the healing of this country is not with the politicians. It's with the people. It really is. I feel that the politicians can say what they want. I mean, I have an opinion about what happened, but it's not going to change anything. So it just fuels the fire of nonsense.
Yeah, you're right, Audrey, and thank you for the call. And look, ultimately, I'm not blaming Bill de Blasio for destroying property or attacking a cop or vandalizing cars because it's these five people that did it. It's not Mayor de Blasio. I do think it's irresponsible for any public official to be this inflammatory on the right or the left. And we've seen, heaven knows, rhetoric from both sides. It reminds me in some ways, obviously the incident I'm about to mention was much more serious. It reminds me in some ways of the incident when Bill de Blasio repeatedly attacked the cops verbally. And he said that he had to have the talk with his son about interacting with police. Meanwhile, this is while his son's being protected by the police. And then all of a sudden after that, officers Ramos and Lou were shot in a police car in Brooklyn. I don't blame Bill de Blasio for shooting that cop, but I do take issue with him focusing the ire of the world on, hey, those are the bad guys over there, the NYPD. I think that's sort of what happened here. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Larry's in Brooklyn. Hello, Larry.
Yeah, hi, Frank. You know, I have a problem with what you said about everything, the way you depict de Blasio. When you say he did X, Y, Z wrong, basically you're sanitizing him. I mean, without furnishing him with a motive, you're just leaving him like he's a regular person who just took the wrong approach. And also, the person who calls him a Marxist is also sanitizing him, because we don't know for sure, just because he was in Cuba and studied in Cuba. But what we do know is that the guy is an anarchist, because he believes that rioters should be allowed to riot. And he showed that in New York City also. So if we know that he's an anarchist, we know that he supported these people that we know that he's leading to somewhere, this anarchy, okay? And we know what his agenda is. It's a racially tinged agenda. But first we have to start off with what he is, and that's an anarchist.
All right. Well, that's your view, Larry. Thank you. I don't know what to say to that. I mean, you've got Bill de Blasio figured out, clearly. 800-848-WABC. I don't think that is the case. I think you're ascribing I think that Mayor de Blasio is a typical politician. He just wants to get elected. Now he wants to be governor. And he's determined that the easiest way to do that is to play to the cheap seats, is to throw red meat. Well, I guess maybe not red meat, but it's to throw soy meat replacements to the left wing that makes up the Democratic primary electorate that he needs to win the governor's race. I think that's all that this is. And he thought by piling on, he would be appealing to that base. 800-848-WABC. Laura is in New Jersey. Hello, Laura.
Yeah, hi, Frank. Frank, I blame the Democrats for this Kyle Rittenhouse thing. They're the ones with their rhetoric every day for years, separating us, calling Republicans racist, anti-Semitic, bigots. I blame Biden for his rhetoric, white supremacy. I blame the Democrats for all this, defunding the police. That's the Democrats. This does not happen on both sides. The Republicans don't have burned up buildings like the big insurrections were by the Democrats last year, May 2020 to September 2020, after George Floyd. Billions of dollars from Democrat voters, yes, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, which is very anti-Semitic. Those were Joe Biden voters, and he said nothing last year. There were hundreds of insurrections. So it's the voters of Joe Biden, I blame the Democrats. They're the most violent.
That's why, Laura, thank you. That's why I found Eric Adams' remarks so refreshing on Saturday, calling out these rioters, calling out these looters, and I hope we hear more of that from Mayor-elect Adams going forward. All right. Meantime, doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, an independent, or whatever the case may be, if you operate in the United States and use money, you are being hit with inflation. You are being hit with that inflation tax. The cost of everything is going up. Cost of energy is going up. Cost of fuel is going up. Cost of everything is going up. What can you do about it? Well, if you're retired, or if you soon will be retired, and you have your money in a traditional retirement account, that money is being eaten away right under your nose. Gold and precious metals offer a hedge against inflation and can protect you in your retirement account. So if you have an existing retirement account, whether it's a Roth IRA or a 401k, think about rolling it into a gold or a silver IRA. And think about doing it with Legacy Precious Metals. Legacy is a great company. They have a long history with this stuff. And if you are looking to provide for your own financial security and the financial security of your family, gold really needs to be a part of your portfolio. Legacy is the company that you can trust because they give you unbiased information based on your individual situation. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. Call 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635. Or you can visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. At LegacyPMInvestments.com, if you want to request some free information from that website, it's going to ask you where you heard about it. Please tell them you heard about it from me, Frank Moreno. LegacyPMInvestments.com.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Moreno, 77 WABC.
The great Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, I believe, singing Refugee. This is a Matt Blaze selection. Well done, Matt. Matt Blaze is in for our usual Matt Sapienza. You know, it's like we're a Bewitched situation. You remember Darren on Bewitched? You know, he was Dick York, and then he was played by Dick Sargent. So just like you need a Dick to replace a Dick, we need a Matt to replace a Matt. So we're happy to have Matt Blaze here. You know, it's funny, and again, I probably shouldn't say this, but, you know, this show is filled with things that I shouldn't say. So I got the word on Friday from Matt Sapienza Thursday night, technically, because Thursday night is Friday morning for us, Thursday evening, he said, both of his parents tested positive for COVID. And since I live with both of them, the chances of me catching it remain high. I also don't want to risk any passing along to you and pass it along to Rachel because the baby's coming soon. Thankfully, I tested back negative, but the doctor said I should remain quarantined anyway. And then he goes into, so that's that. Now, I thought it was a little curious, I have to say, that he said he was going to be out Friday and Monday because it struck me as one of those situations where, all right, he's taking a COVID exposure and making a 4-day weekend out of it, right? Because, all right, okay, you test negative, you're only going to be out Friday and Monday. So then today, or yesterday technically, he indicated that he also tested positive for COVID. His parents don't feel well, but for him, he says he feels just like a cold. So we're wishing the best of luck to Matt and his parents. And he should be back, I guess. He said by December 1st. So we're going to have Matt Blaze all week. And then I guess Matt Sapienza presumably will be back on December 1st. 800-848-WABC. Hey, if you want to follow us on social media, you know, sometimes people ask, hey, Frank, you know, your show is so great. What can we do to help it grow? What can we do to help expand it? There's really three things that you can do. One is you should listen. Two is you should subscribe to the podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, whether it's iTunes, Google Podcasts, or Spotify, anything, we're on just about every podcast platform. Just search The Other Side of Midnight and press the subscribe button. Three is to follow us on all forms of social media and then share our links to listen live. For instance, on Twitter, at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. Twitter does suppress some of my tweets, I've noticed. For instance, I'm trying to go to space and be the first radio talk show host to do a show from space. And I asked for people to retweet me. That's the very first tweet you see. But I've noticed that tweet is not popping up on people's Twitters. They have to go and go affirmatively to it and find it. So if you want to find that tweet and retweet my tweet to Elon Musk, you can do so at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. We're on Facebook as well at facebook.com/MoranoFan. That's facebook.com/MoranoFan. So those are the three things that you can do is listen, subscribe to the podcast, follow me on social media, and share our link to listen live. And we also have a Facebook group that you can join just by searching Morano Radio Fans and Haters. That's Morano Radio Fans and Haters. Hey, until next hour, help control the pet population. In the words of the great Bob Barker, have your dog or cat spayed or neutered.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Everyone, this is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Now, today is a big day because today is the, I hate to use the term anniversary, but it is the anniversary, even though it doesn't commemorate a happy occasion. Today is the anniversary of the John F. Kennedy assassination. Now, we have heard since 1963 a tremendous amount of distrust about the official story from the Warren Commission. In fact, when Congress then investigated this on their own with the Select Committee on Assassinations, they came to a different conclusion than the one that was reached by the Warren Commission. So last year, I thought it would be interesting to feature a whole week worth of theories about what happened. So every day we had a different theorist on. Some people were conspiracy theorists. Some people were believers that it was a lone gunman. Of the conspiracy theorists, there was all sorts of different people saying different things about the motivation. Some people said it was the mob. Some people said it was Lyndon Johnson. Some people said it was Fidel Castro. Some people said it was a plot between the mob, the CIA, Fidel Castro, and Lyndon Johnson. Other people said that Kennedy was killed because he wanted peace with Russia. Other people said that Kennedy was killed because he was going to reveal the truth about UFOs. I'm serious. That was one of the gentlemen that we had on. So I thought about doing the same thing this week. But I said, well, look, if people heard all these conspiracy theories last year, well, I don't know what that means. I don't know that that makes a whole lot of sense to do that. So I thought something that might be interesting is to give you an opportunity to tell me what you think happened. 800-848-9222. Did Lee Harvey Oswald act alone when he shot the president? At one time or another, doubters of the lone gunman theory have accused 42 groups, 82 assassins, and 214 people of being involved in the assassination. Now, some obviously the theories that I just mentioned are some of the most prevalent, but there's some theories that you may not be as familiar with. You remember Donald Trump during the presidential campaign, he put forward the idea that maybe Senator Ted Cruz's father was somehow involved in the Kennedy assassination. Look, it's possible. It's possible. Maybe it's not. Maybe it is. Who knows? You know who, speaking of fathers, I think this is going to blow your mind. I'm betting you've never heard this before. Do you know whose father claimed to be responsible for the Kennedy assassination? Woody Harrelson's father. Woody Harrelson's father, Charles, was, and I don't think a lot of people know this. He was a hitman and an organized crime figure who was convicted of assassinating a federal judge John Wood. He was the first federal judge to be killed in the 20th century. And he is the father of Woody Harrelson. And he died. He died in prison, Florence Supermax, which if you know anything about that prison, that's where they put tough hombres. And he was actually tried for the murder of Alan Berg. So it's an interesting theory, because when he was finally arrested, we know he was convicted, he assassinated this federal judge. But in September of 1980, Woody Harrelson's father surrendered to police after a six-hour standoff in which he was reportedly high on cocaine. During the standoff, he threatened suicide, and he said that he had killed both Judge Wood and President Kennedy. He said it. Now, he was convicted of killing Judge Wood, never convicted of killing President Kennedy. Could it be because the Warren Commission already had their fall guy 17 years earlier? I don't know. Or it could have been just the guy was high out of his mind and he would have confessed to kidnapping the Lindbergh baby. But what do you think happened? 800-848-WABC. If you think Oswald acted alone, I want to hear why. If you think that it was a conspiracy, I want to know the nature of the conspiracy theory that you think took place. Who was involved? What were their motivations? What do you think the story was? 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Meantime, though, Neil on Staten Island has been patiently holding. Let me let him weigh in on whatever he wanted to talk about. Hello, Neil.
Well, I was going to talk about de Blasio, but I'll talk about Kennedy.
Hey, it's your dime, Neil. Talk about whatever you like.
That's all right. You know, I was in the third grade when Kennedy was assassinated. It was on a Friday. We were lined up in the hall for dismissal at 3 o'clock. And the teacher across the hall, she told her class, when we come back on Monday, I want to report on the assassination of the president. Now, no one heard about that. My teacher, I forgot her name, she heard that. She started crying. She broke out crying. So, I mean, it was very emotional for everybody.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think that Oswald acted alone, but I think he was backed by a foreign government. And the reason I say that is because every president has refused to release the classified documents about the assassination. And I think it's because a foreign government is involved and they don't want to embarrass them or start another war or whatever reason. That's just my opinion on that.
Well, that is interesting. But let me ask you. So let's say, for instance, it was Russia. Let's just say the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union no longer exists, right? So why wouldn't President Trump, for instance, a guy that has always been into conspiracy theories, as evidenced by the fact that he pinned part of the assassination on Ted Cruz's father. But why would a guy like Donald Trump not release these documents showing Oswald's support from, say, the Soviet Union and then be done with it? Because Putin wouldn't be blamed, because the Soviet Union, you know, was a totally different regime. It was a communist regime. Why would they do that? Why would they not do that, I should say?
It's a good question. I mean, all those people are probably dead by now. Maybe it's because of prestige or history or what else could it be? I mean, they're all dead. So I think maybe just to go down in history, they wouldn't do it. There has to be a reason. And especially, I was disappointed with Trump, because I thought he was going to release the papers. Biden, he doesn't know what he's doing. But Trump, I was really disappointed at. But, I mean, what can I say? There's a reason there somehow, Frank. We don't know what it is.
Yeah, well, I think that you're exactly right. There is a reason that every president doesn't release this information.
And I believe that Warren was an honest guy, and I think they did an honest report on what they believed happened at the time. So, I mean, I have to go with that. I mean, everything that happens, there's always conspiracies. No matter what happens into the future, there's 100 people that got 100 different books they wrote about it.
That's true.
Who knows?
Right? Well, as I said, there are no shortage of potential assassins. 82 assassins, 42 groups, and 214 people accused of being involved in the assassination. I mean, that's a lot of different potential theories.
And it'll go on into perpetuity, Frank.
Yep, that's true. 800-848-WABC. No one knows for sure who was behind John F. Kennedy's assassination, but there's the theory that it was the CIA, the mob, Cuban exiles, Lyndon Johnson. My friend Roger Stone is a big proponent of the Lyndon Johnson theory. I had him on last year talking about it, the KGB theory. So what do you think happened? 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Matt, do we have that audio that I just sent you? All right. This is an interview that I did with former Senator Gary Hart. Now, you remember Senator Gary Hart from when he ran for president. He was the senator from Colorado. He ran for president, got wrapped up in that monkey business situation. But when he was in Congress, he served on the congressional committee investigating the assassinations of John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, and Martin Luther King Jr. The guy had access to witness testimony. The guy had access to all sorts of evidence. And about 8 years ago, on the 50th anniversary of the assassination, I asked him about this whole situation. Here's what he said on the JFK front.
And the principal thing we came up with was were assassination plots against foreign leaders, including Fidel Castro, by both the Eisenhower and Kennedy administrations, and even previous ones, and the use in those cases of the CIA of mafia figures.
Wow.
And two of those mafia figures, senior ones, were killed during our investigation. So this opened up an entire panoply of possibilities. The Warren Commission did not know that the CIA was working with the mafia to try to kill Castro up until the time of the Kennedy assassination.
So that's a fact, right? This isn't speculation.
This is a fact.
Wow.
This is a fact.
Incredible. Incredible. So I guess it's the first rule of assassination is kill the assassins.
Well, that's part of it. But also, as it turned out, kill the people who may have known who killed the assassin and why. Man called Sam Giancana, man called Johnny Rosselli, were both killed during our investigation. And those murders have never been solved.
I thought that was pretty interesting. The fact that during their investigation, two mafia figures that were supposedly involved in this whole thing, meaning collaborating with the CIA to kill foreign leaders, and this congressional committee is investigating the possibility of blowback, Gary Hart is saying there, look, these guys got killed during the investigation. I thought that was pretty interesting. 800-848-WABC. Another guy who has spent a lot of time studying this, writing about this, and so forth is former governor of Minnesota, former Navy SEAL, Jesse Ventura.
The rug. I mean.
All right, we'll give a listen to that audio in just a little bit. Harrison is in Gloversville. Hello, Harrison.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
I'm hanging in there, Harrison.
All right. I as far as who was behind it, I would have no way. I mean, as you say, there are Heinz 57 varieties of theories on that. But I do know there had to be more than one shooter. I'll tell you why. First of all, the bullet which hit Kennedy, that supposedly we were told that the first bullet hit him in the back of the neck or the lower part of the back of the head and exited through his throat. And then somehow
right, that's the so-called magic bullet theory.
Yeah, the one that did a Z path and suddenly went down and hit Connolly.
Right, that's why it's the magic bullet, because it was doing the kind of movements that no bullet could make.
Of course, because the first shot hit Connolly, but at the same time, Kennedy was shot in the throat from in front, and I will tell you why. Whenever anybody is hit with a bullet, they always clutch the point where the bullet enters, not where it leaves. So his hand went up to his throat because he was shot from in front in the throat. Then he was shot in the side of the head, the right side of the head, above his roughly above his ear, and you see the flash of the bullet hit, and it went in toward his forehead, and you see him start to lose consciousness and start to fall forward. He still has his hand clutched to his throat. Then all of a sudden, his head jerks back. Reason? That, first of all, somebody said, well, that's because there was a reflex or a convulsion from the bullet that hit him in the head. No, because where that bullet hit him, in the upper side of the head and going toward the frontal lobe, that would not cause a convulsion. The convulsion would occur in areas that control motor function. What happened was he was hit hit moments afterwards from in front in the forehead somewhere, and that knocked his head backward because he was going limp. He was going unconscious from the bullet that hit him in the side of the head, so he was relaxed, and it sprung his head backward when it hit. And that's why you see Jackie Kennedy crawling out across the back of the car to try to retrieve a piece of his scalp or part of his head, because the bullet apparently went through and blew out part of the back of his head, and she goes back to try to retrieve it. And so, you know, there had to have been somebody shooting from in front at the same time Oswald was shooting from up above and behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've read the experts that say that I agree with you, to be honest. And that's the famous scene in JFK, the movie JFK, where Kevin Costner is saying back and to the left, back and to the left. That was a real trial that Jim Garrison prosecuted against Clay Shaw. But there are experts that say they describe it. I think it's the jet effect, something like that, that makes your head look as if it was shot in another direction. But I agree. I do think there was a second shooter. I think the acoustics evidence bears that out in the congressional investigation that took place in the 1970s. I think it's – I don't know who's responsible. Take your pick. That's where I can't answer. I can't answer the why or the who. I do think that was a conspiracy and there was a second shooter. I'd love to hear your thoughts, though. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Once again, this is Governor Jesse Ventura talking about the Kennedy assassination and his theory about what happened. Meantime, there's 1, 2, 3, 4 open lines if you want to be heard with what you think happened. 800-848-WABC.
The rug. I mean, you know, the quickest example, they held a special session when it became known that Oswald had an FBI informant number and was actually a paid FBI informant.
Wow.
A Houston paper came out with that. The Warren Commission held a special session, and you'd think it would be to investigate whether it was true or not. No. When the minutes came out of the special session, which it took Harold Weisberg over 20 years to get because they hid them, the special session was all about how to cover it up and not let the public know it was true.
So do we know, based on your research, and I know you've written entire books on this, who was responsible for the Kennedy
assassination? Well, it's difficult to say.
He goes on to say that essentially the and what's going on? How come are you trying to censor Governor Jesse Ventura? Are you part of the plot, Matt Blaze, to keep the truth from getting out there?
It is a full moon still.
Yeah. Likely story. I think this is either you're somehow interested in keeping this story from coming to the public light, or you're in cahoots with your pal Frankie Russo to sabotage this show.
I'm a big fan of Jesse Ventura, back to when he was the body of Jesse Ventura.
You wouldn't know it by your ability to press play, I'll tell you that. 800-848-9222. Andy is on Staten Island. Hello, Andy.
Hey, Frank. Yeah, you're on to it. My mother researched that like crazy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She was like a Reader's Digest writer, little stories, you know. And she would have loved to have written a book about that, but my father wouldn't stand, so he's going to get us all killed. My father was good friends with Bob Grant.
Right, you mentioned that. You mentioned that.
Yeah, yeah. Bob Grant was a great guy.
Yeah, he was a good friend of mine, absolutely.
Oh, I remember. I love that you were with him because you were picking up all great radio stuff.
Thank you.
No, it was Lyndon Johnson hooked up with the mob, like, but the wrong mob, you know. Like, not like the John Gotti type of mob. He was more like with the Columbos that, like, went out of business. You know, these guys. But they shoot two or three guys show up to do it. That's their style.
Yeah, well, look, I don't know what happened, Andy, but I'll defer to your mother's expertise, happily.
Check this out, Frank. Listen to what we're listening to.
I don't. I can't make it out. I hear music, but I don't know.
I remember that day in Dallas.
Oh, okay. All right.
Shot JFK, and he had to pass away. That's going to be your part.
I like it. Hey, sure. I'm in. Just don't make me one of the assassins, Andy.
No. I need a ping pong partner.
Yeah. That's right. We're gonna have to play soon, Andy. I got some ping pong in this weekend. I'll tell you about it. I'll tell you about that a little bit later. But it's funny. You know who I was talking to about this a little bit at the Tunnel to Towers walk was Greg Kelly. I usually don't see Greg Kelly around here too often, but Greg does not believe that there was a conspiracy, and he doesn't believe – he believes in the magic bullet theory. And then Greg has an interesting theory about what motivated Oswald. And I just actually sent him an email inviting him to come on with me one day this week. So I don't want to spoil for you what he said, but I hope he does come on. If he doesn't come on, then I'll just tell you what he said. But the interesting thing about seeing Greg – is you gotta see how thin this guy has become. The guy looks like he could be on the cover of GQ. The guy looks like he could be on TV. And you might have seen the story about him in the New York Post this weekend. He just sold his apartment in, I think, Chelsea for $1.6 million. I guarantee you they threw an extra couple of $100,000 onto that offer just because the guy looks so handsome now. I'm telling you, guy looks great. Not an ounce of fat on him. And you know why? Because he went to the skinny center. He was getting a little pudgy. And he went to the skinny center and Mitch Suss whipped him into shape quite literally. So I'm going to go to these guys, the skinny center in Westchester County, and I'm going to have them whip me into shape because I am way overweight. And the holidays don't make this any easier. And the Skinny Center has this great program where they go through exclusive lab testing that tells you why you can't stop gaining, why you can't stop eating, and why it's so difficult for you to lose weight. So I started using these drops that they give you. It's called Skinny Spritz. So I'm not officially on the program, but I'm taking some of these drops. And I do find that they have modified or at least curbed some of my cravings now and again. Although it is tougher when you have pizza like Grimaldi's sitting in the kitchen area. Big thank you to the good folks at Grimaldi's for bringing it to us. But Mitch at the Skinny Center has said that that's the way to get started. Skinny Spritz helps his patients adhere to the program. The hardest part is getting started, and this product gives you a jump start. Call the Skinny Center if you're interested in losing some weight at 914-703-4811 or go to theskinnycenter.com. That's theskinnycenter.com. Again, that number is 914-703-4811. 800-848-WABC if you want to weigh in on what you think happened today in 1963. Who's responsible for the Kennedy assassination and why? If you can add the why if you want. That's the question. 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
We are New York on New York's Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
I'm a loser. I'm a loser. And I'm not what I appear to be. Of all the love I have won or have lost, there is one love I should never have crossed. was a girl in a million, my friend. I should have known she would win in the end. I'm a loser, and I lost someone who needs to
be. Ah, yes, the Beatles. I am a loser. This song really could be my anthem when it comes to ping pong, because I am a fan of playing ping pong. I enjoy it, but I'm not that good. I'm not that good. I lose to everybody almost, and I'm trying to get good. That's why I'm always looking for people to practice with. I played quite a bit of ping pong this weekend. So Friday, my friend Joe Borelli, who's now the minority leader of the New York City Council, he was filling in for Joe Piscopo, not on this station, but on another station that Joe hosts a show on AM 970. And this was Joe Borelli talking with some of his cohorts. And ultimately, the conversation lends itself to ping pong.
We can move on.
It should make you happy, though, that I do get an occasional call from him to play ping pong.
Talking about me.
Yeah, what was the deal with
that? I saw that on Facebook that he had invited people to come over to his house.
He's practicing for me.
But do you, do you play ping pong on a regular basis?
No, I don't even own a table. I don't even own a ping pong table. However, I played a lot of ping pong as a kid, and I played a lot of ping pong when I can play. I enjoy it. I think it's a fun game.
So you were the Forrest Gump of Staten Island.
Right, but in my office, I have like a little ping pong set, and every once in a while, we'll just unfold the table and play a few games. But like, I don't have a set at my house. I'm not playing, but he does. And I don't think he can get over the fact that he invites me over. We have some pleasant conversation. We have a cup of coffee, maybe a drink, depending on the time of day. Mm. And then once that ball gets bounced, it is just dominating for 30 minutes. And I don't think he could take it. He's the owner of the table. You wouldn't want to, like, you wouldn't go to Michael Jordan's house and expect to win on his home basketball
court. No, of course,
yeah. Right?
Of course
you wouldn't. But here's Frank. He's just, you know, he's getting spiked. He's getting the ball Englished right past him. It's really tough. But you're right. Enough about Frank.
So what Joe said there is 80% accurate, which for him is pretty good. So Joe does come over just about every Saturday morning, and we'll play ping pong. He came over this Saturday, and we played. First of all, Joe is not dominating these games. Joe has beat me every game that we've played. That's true. But the score is 21-18, 21-17, 21-16. They're close games sometimes. I'm leading. He ultimately always does rally. He is a better player. That is true. That's the fact. But for him to act like he doesn't have a table, he's got a table in his office. The guy plays all the time. So enough of this, oh, I never play, I don't have any ping pong ability, I never played ping pong in my whole life. But anyway, so Joe came over Saturday morning, we played, that was fun, he beat me, we did two quick games, both very tight. You know what happened? I was, the first game I lost, 21-19, and then he said, I could tell you've been practicing. When the fact of the matter is, because I don't have that many players to play with, I haven't been practicing that much. So then we played the second game. What I have been doing is watching a lot of ping pong videos, trying to improve my game, look at different tactics and stuff. Really, I'm now convinced that that stuff is not that helpful. I think you really just need to practice. And so that's what I've been trying to do. So I remembered I watched one of these videos that had a different grip than the one I've been using. So I said, oh, let me try that ping pong grip that I saw in one of those videos. And it totally screwed me up. And Joe opened up a wide lead, 15-10. So I said, when I was trailing by five, I said, forget it. Screw this. I'm going back to my old grip. And I came back, and he only ended up beating me 21-18. So you got to trust your own instincts. You got to practice. That's the thing. So I played with him on Friday. Saturday, I had a couple people over in the evening to play. So I invited my friend Brian Goldstein, who had come over a few weeks before. He'd come over 3 weeks before on a Sunday or a Saturday to just – it was a Sunday. He'd come over a few weeks before to play, and I ordered pizza. But a fellow that was over that day, Nick Barbaro – from the Gold Shield. I've talked about the Gold Shield before. They're great. Check them out online, thesimpletruth.us. It's a great way to end the problem of veteran suicide, he had brought over all these sandwiches. So even though I ordered pizza, the pizza didn't get eaten. So 3 weeks ago, Brian's over. And I said, all right, well, there's no room in the refrigerator right now. Let me stick this pizza in the oven. Not turned on, but just stick it in the oven as sort of a place to keep it in the meantime. So I go on with my life. So Saturday night, Brian comes over again. He comes over around 8:30, 9 o'clock. I had arranged kind of a surprise for his brother, Jeffrey, to come over as well to play, because I'd played with Jeffrey Goldstein about a month earlier, and I beat Jeffrey. We played 7 games. I won 4. He won 3. But so we were pretty evenly matched. So I arranged for Jeffrey to come over. And you know who else came over? Is Corey Windelspecht. Now, if that name does not ring a bell, he is one of the greatest Americans who has ever lived. Do you remember up until 3 years ago when you would drive into the Holland Tunnel from New Jersey to New York around this time of year? What would you see? You would see a tree, a Christmas tree that was over the N in Holland Tunnel instead of over the A. And Corey was the one that riled public opposition to that horrible Christmas decoration at the Holland Tunnel, excuse me, holiday decoration, and got the tree moved from the N to the A. He's an American hero. He's a great guy. So he came over Saturday as well. He brings over some wine, some beer, and what I thought was very thoughtful, he and his girlfriend Amy, who she's actually been a guest on the Bernie and Sid show. She does these designer dog food cakes. She's got a great business going with that. And she's just a lovely person. She brings over, the two of them bring over, a bottle of sparkling cider for my wife, because my wife is with child. She can't really drink alcohol. So I said, oh, that's nice. So I take the sparkling cider and I put it in the freezer to give it a little bit of a chill. So you got Jeffrey over, Jeffrey Goldstein, Brian Goldstein, Holland Tunnel hero Corey Windelspecht, and his girlfriend Amy. We're all over. We're playing. So and because we now have this air hockey table set up, the people who are on deck to play the next ping pong game, they would play air hockey. So I got to play some air hockey. I lost to Corey and then got to play some ping pong. Jeffrey Goldstein, he dominated the night. He won 6 games. He beat us all. He beat me twice. He beat his brother and he beat Corey. I mean, I don't know what happened to the guy that I played a month ago that I beat 4 times, but he was dominant on Saturday. So that was Saturday. And then Sunday comes around. And Sunday comes around. And my wife goes to use the oven for something. And she sees there's a box of pizza in there. And she said, when is this from? When was this from? I said, I don't know. She said, when's the last time you ordered pizza? She said, this has to be from 3 weeks ago when you had Brian Goldstein over. Sure enough, it was a beautiful Ciro's pie, 2/3 of which was still intact and filled with mold. I had put this box of pizza in the oven and forgot about it for 3 weeks, and it wasn't rediscovered until yesterday. So I'm a loser when it comes to ping pong. Got trounced by Joe Borelli in the morning on Saturday, then got trounced by Jeffrey Goldstein in the evening, and then I spent $25 on this pie from Ciro's and then pretty much forgot about it, and it was destroyed by mold. Now, then Sunday comes around, little late. We're going through our day. We're doing Christmas decorations, and we're, you know, watching football. We're talking, spending time with one another and so forth. And I say to my wife, honey, did you ever take that sparkling cider out of the freezer? And she said, no, I didn't know that you put it in the freezer. So sure enough, I go to the freezer. The sparkling cider was totally ruined. It exploded in the freezer, and that was ruined. So it was very, very generous of those folks to give us that sparkling cider. But I destroyed the sparkling cider, and I destroyed the pizza. Both of those discoveries were made the same day. So lo and behold, like the song says, I am a loser. But then Sunday comes around, And I get the call from my congresswoman, Nicole Malliotakis. And Nicole is a longtime friend of mine. We go back more than 20 years. And I'm the one, as I've talked about before, I'm the one that first convinced her to run for office. And I worked on her campaign when she was first elected to the state assembly. I've always been a big contributor to her. Friday night, I went to her birthday party. I emceed her fundraiser, made a contribution as well. Happy to do that. But Nicole and I, especially before she was elected, she and I used to play ping pong all the time. So she comes over, and finally I found an elected official that I can beat. And I beat her handily. I mean, she's a decent player, but I was able to beat her handily. She brought over our mutual friend Kara, who's on her staff. Kara has got to be the best ping pong player that I've ever played on that table with. She is a machine. I played against an Asian guy on a cruise ship one time who I think was a professional. That guy was the best player I've ever played with. But other than that guy, Kara is incredible. You could tell as soon as the ball came off her paddle that I was going to have a tough time returning every serve. So we played twice. She beat me twice. She beat Nicole once. She's a machine. She's a machine. But that's exactly who I need to be playing with. Because that's the only way I can get better to beat Joe Borelli is if I'm playing at someone at Kara Bonin Country's level. So I'm going to invite her over again this week to get some more lessons in. A fun weekend overall. By the way, speaking of Nicole Malliotakis, I know a lot of you, I don't really want to get into this because it's impossible to discuss the issue rationally. But a lot of you took umbrage with her. A lot of you who are conservative took umbrage with her for voting for the bipartisan infrastructure deal. And a lot of people calling her a rhino, saying she deserves to be primaried. Well, you know who came out yesterday and said he's supporting her for re-election? I already knew this, but he made it public. Donald Trump. Donald Trump said even though she voted for infrastructure, he's still all for her. And I'm the one that introduced the two of them. So I saw the chemistry between Trump and Nicole. So I'm not the least bit surprised by this. And I am very pleased to hear that because I would think if you're a Republican and you're thinking about running against an incumbent congresswoman, the fact that Donald Trump, who is, like it or not, the most popular figure in the GOP right now, the fact that he's going out of his way to endorse her, I would think that gives any potential GOP opponent pause. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Gene is in Manhattan. Hello, Gene.
Frank, a small matter for Monday morning, but I want to go back to Friday early in the morning and thank you so very much for allowing me with my battery-operated radio to listen in to your phone conversation to Dr. Sky out in Arizona as we follow the lunar eclipse.
Well, my pleasure. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I thought he was phenomenal.
It was wonderful. It was as good as being at the Hayden Planetarium or being on the roof of my apartment with a telescope.
Well, I am pleased to hear that, Gene. I certainly found it really interesting, and I'm so pleased. You know, when you plan out these segments, you never know if they're going to work on radio or not. But I'm so pleased to hear that you enjoyed it as well.
Okay, then. All the best.
Thank you. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Vinny is in Caldwell. Hello, Vinny.
Yeah, how you doing, everybody?
I'm well.
I just want to congratulate you on your new baby coming. I have six myself. It's a blessing.
Oh, well, that's very nice of you, Vinny. Thank you.
I want to talk about an issue you were talking about earlier when you were saying, why is everything a racial issue? I'm just assuming, by your opinion, you never lived in a city. And if I'm wrong, you must be ignoring the fact that justice for minorities is not equal to justice for residents in suburbs or higher taxated vicinities. I was a victim of a deadly mugging in the Bronx.
Oh, well, I mean, it wasn't a deadly mugging because you're still alive.
Well, I was in pretty bad shape. Right. I had a double concussion.
Oh, wow.
Always a broken hand, broken rib. I was surrounded by young men with baseball bats. They were looking to rob me, but never succeeded. And in my in both incidences, the police precincts are only 5 to 10 city blocks away from the crimes, and the response time was horrendous. A third time also in the Bronx on Fordham Road.
So what's your point exactly, Vinny, with respect to the Rittenhouse verdict and everything and the riots and Bill de Blasio? What's your point?
I'm just getting the point there. We can't condemn people who live in these inner cities because of the elements of crime and because of the inefficiencies of police not doing their sworn duties to protect and serve. I was a homeowner in the Bronx in East New York and an avid taxpayer.
I can't condemn the people that are destroying cars and throwing things at people?
And which cars and throwing things at people have to do with what I'm talking about?
Well, Vinny, again, if I had a decoder ring and a magnifying glass, I couldn't find out what point you're making. So I don't know what you're talking about. So don't sit and tell me your life story and every tragedy like you've ever experienced as if I'm living the radio, the 21st century radio version of Queen for a day, and then make it impossible for me to know what you're talking about. And then when I try to veer you back on to course, you tell me, what does that have to do with what I'm talking about? I don't know. You called me. 800. I'm living in a Abbott and Costello routine, except I'm not sure whether I'm the one that's dumb or I'm the straight man here. I can't figure it out. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Pete on Staten Island. Hello, Pete.
Hey, Frank, after that call, I got to take a deep breath.
Yeah, you and me both, man. You need a deep breath. I need a shot of something, but thankfully management doesn't keep booze on the floor.
A little Johnny Walker Black would be in order.
Yeah, that's
what
right.
What I'm calling about not two issues, about with the ping pong. You know, during the summer over at the Kasha's house, Drew and Fred and John, their mother, Phyllis, she plays a mean game of ping pong. We're afraid to play her because she blows
really?
Doors. Oh, yeah. She's the person, 83 years old, and she owns the ping pong table. No, but we just bow down. We stay clear of her. You should play her a game. You will find it enjoying. I mean, she never misses, and she's got these.
Yeah, have her invite me over. I'll play. I'd love to.
Oh, definitely. Well, we do it in the summer because we're outside.
Great.
And you could come and enjoy the saltwater pool, which we have. And it's a real nice time. You and your wife, after your wife recovers after the birth of your beautiful child. And I wish you the best. I got a daughter that's a blessing. And I never had a son, but I raised my nephews and my niece. So,
that's awfully nice.
And the way you play softball, you should be great at ping pong.
Well, I see.
You got... You know,
I could stand to improve my softball game as well, Pete. That's true.
Yeah, well, now, I saw you play, and I love the way you play. You're good. You move around good, and you got a good eye for the ball. So that's a very important ball.
Well, thank you, Pete. I appreciate that. Hey, I got an SMS text message here, and you can always SMS text message me at 8168-MURANO. That's 8168-MURANO. My theory, this is not my theory, but this is a person writing to me. My theory on the JFK assassination is that Lee Harvey Oswald was just a patsy. Any idiot knows you could never hit a moving target from more than 50 yards away with curtain rods. Good show, Frank. All right. Well, I don't believe that Oswald was the lone gunman. I do think that there was multiple shooters. So, you know, that's just my view. But, you know, the thing with Oswald, everybody trying to say that he's a patsy, you still have the issue of Officer Tippit. Everybody always forgets about Officer Tippit, but here's a guy that was killed that day by Oswald. The guy wasn't even 40 years old. He died because Oswald shot him. So I don't think there's any credible doubt that Oswald did murder Officer Tippit. So I think you have to be very careful to absolve Oswald from any culpability here. 800-848-WABC. Joe is in Manhattan. Hello, Joe.
Hi. Listen, Frank, your show is unique. You know, compared to the other shows that are repetitive quite often with the same news events repeated back and forth, you know?
Well, thank you. I try to be unique.
Boring,
thank you.
But yours is very unique because you bring up personal matters. And, for example, the odor you were referring to, I love, of course, Curtis Sliwa to death. He's my favorite, one of the favorite, top three in the world, you know. Now, and then, of course, about the pizza, right? Was that pizza sitting in the oven, you said?
For 3 weeks.
For so long?
Yes, 3 weeks.
But weren't you using that oven?
No. No, I guess it goes to show you how little we use the oven.
Okay. But what about the Kennedy assassination? My viewpoint is that Lee Harvey Oswald did everything possible on the planet, serving in the military, going to Russia, marrying a Russian, etc., to become famous. Somehow it failed, so he decided the other way around, the notorious fashion, you know. And he, and maybe there was a second gunman, you know, involved, and he was a marksman in the military.
Yeah, that's, you know, true, but he'd still have to be pretty proficient to fire off that kind of shots with that kind of accuracy that quickly. Certainly possible. Look, and a lot of experts have concluded that he was the lone gunman. I do think there was a second shooter, though, Joe.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Melvin in the Bronx. Hello, Melvin.
Greetings. You were talking earlier about Gabby and Hover so long off my Singapore. Oh, yes, about your situation. Oh, Lord. About, yeah.
Rittenhouse? Was it Rittenhouse? Was it Chuck D?
Oh, yes, about the gentleman over there that I got quotes.
Yeah, okay, go ahead. What's your comment?
My comment was, yes, you have a jury situation and about the law of the land. I grasped that one. I also remember how the law was written, how it excludes my ancestors, how it was written in blood. And also examined how the jury situation was fixed up, so it was sent straight for the acquittal. And the message is sent. Yes, I go back to 1776, the protest. He protests against what he thought was an unjust situation. Others will protest what they thought was an unjust situation. Only way you're going to sit down, you got to sit down at the table, and we can agree to disagree without being disagreeable.
Well, Melvin, I think that's a good attitude, and I wish more people had it these days.
Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, based on the way the United States or North America, one of the greatest countries this world ever seen, and based on situation, you got to ask yourself one question. Why do people come to the United States and North America? Who fought? My ancestors, who were kidnapped and brought here because of the 1501, the King of Spain issued a proclamation and so forth, kidnapping Africans and putting them into slavery as a labor force and so forth. Every 100 Africans that were taken out of Africa, only 5 made it to what is called the United States North America, English speaking country. Other 95 were distributed in South, Central, and on the Caribbean. So what do we fight? Do the other 95 will come here? Who fought here?
Melvin, I have to run.
They refuse to fight for what they were fought here by my ancestors. That's what this whole protest is all about.
Well, Melvin, I apologize to your ancestors, and I hope you'll forgive me for enslaving them and any role that I or any of my ancestors played in enslaving them. And I'm not trying to be glib, but I'm not sure how much longer, we can use slavery as an excuse to justify negative behavior in the case of rioters or explanatory behavior in the case of laws that you don't like. Slavery ended around 1865 in the United States. So in 2021, I really do feel like constantly going back to slavery as an excuse for whatever you want to use it for, I don't think that is effective. It doesn't hold water with me, quite honestly. But if any of my ancestors, I don't think believe any of my ancestors had slaves, but if any of my ancestors enslaved any of your ancestors, then I apologize on their behalf. Meantime, If you want to benefit in terms of material wealth and have a secure retirement, then the best way that you can do that is with Legacy Precious Metals. These guys are gold and silver specialists. These guys understand that gold is a hedge against inflation. Silver is a hedge against inflation. The lower the dollar is, the less the dollar is worth, the more gold is worth. The worse inflation gets, the more gold is worth. So that means if you have your money sitting in a traditional retirement account, you should think about converting some of it over to gold. Gold retains its value. Gold, the price of gold goes up as the value of the dollar goes down. If you have a traditional retirement account, think about converting it to a gold or a silver IRA. If you do that, do it with Legacy Precious Metals. Gold should be a part of every wise investor's portfolio, and Legacy is the company that you can trust because they have experience and they will give you unbiased information based on your individual situation. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. Write this number down. 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635. Or visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
77 WABC. The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. 77 WABC.
Driving that train, I'm cocaine. Casey Jones, you better watch your speed. Trouble ahead, trouble behind. And you know that notion just crossed my mind.
Grateful Dead, Casey Jones. Must have been Woody Harrelson's father driving that train. 800-848-WABC, taking your calls on the Kennedy assassination. I read this interesting article. I'm going to link to it right now on my Facebook page. Whose job is it to prevent Armageddon? Now, you saw the movie Deep Impact. You saw the movie Armageddon. One's about a comet that's going to destroy the Earth. One's about an asteroid that's going to destroy the Earth. Certainly the movie Asteroid as well. Same deal. And now calls are growing for a global planetary defense strategy as thousands of near-Earth asteroids are being discovered each year. So NASA is preparing to slam a spacecraft into an asteroid at 16,000 miles per hour in an attempt to nudge it off course. But this year-long mission is scheduled to begin on November 24th, and it's raising a lot of questions for scientists and security experts. Whose job is it to defend the planet against a possibly life-ending space rock if one's headed our way? Is it United States? Is it China? Maybe it should be China. They've got the most people. Is it Russia? Is it India? Is it the United Arab Emirates? So it is something that we need to figure out. And I'm hoping to get some experts on to talk about this, about how we can better make sure we don't end up like the dinosaurs. 800-848-WABC. Ow! Is in Rockland. Hello, Al.
Hello. In terms of Kennedy, I think people forget about the zeitgeist that, by and large, I was in sixth grade when he got shot, and I was in a Catholic school. And when we were coming out, there were like a number of, like, particularly some of the girls, but mostly the Irish girls who were just almost hysterical and crying. And, you know, most of us were upset, but not that much. You know, across the street was the regular public school. And there were a lot of people laughing. You know, we like to believe that it was this big traumatic thing. We all shared in the event equally, but it wasn't. You know, the truth is we remember how the reporters have left a memory for us. about what a somber time it was. But I remember at the time they knocked off all television. All you could see is stuff about, you know, the Kennedys and so forth. And a lot of kids in particular were really, really upset and angry, and other people were angry, you know, messed up football games, everything. And so I'm always amused when people want to go over the memory of the anniversary of the shooting as if it was this universal trauma for the country. But for a lot of people, they were almost pretty happy that he got shot.
Yeah, well, look, there's going to be miserable people in any decade, Al, and that is a shame. But yeah, there were elements of the John Birch Society and other elements that were celebrating. I got an email here from a gentleman named Chris who says his father was in the army when Kennedy was assassinated, and his father told him that they had his company all try to recreate the shots that Oswald was accused of taking and that no one could do it. Well, you know what a guy in the Marines would say. Oswald was a Marine. No wonder the guys in the Army couldn't do it. I'm just kidding. All right. Until next hour, keep asking questions. This is the other side of midnight. I am happy that you're listening. Hey, there's been a lot of discussion about the situation at Rikers Island. And Rikers Island is a mess, and there seems to be two schools of thought about how to handle it. You have the de Blasio school of thought, which is to close Rikers Island. And then you have the school of thought from me and others, which is to fix the problems at Rikers Island, not export them to four other jails. But we're going to get into Rikers in a big way with a friend of mine named Dom Crispino. Now, Dom is an interesting guy. Let me tell you, I've known Dom for many years, and he is someone who was an attorney. And he then became a criminal and went to prison and then became a radio commentator. That's when I got to know him. And then he was 4 years ago convicted of another crime. And while he was on trial for that crime, he spent a lot of time at Rikers. Well, his conviction was just vacated. And so he's out and about. He's free to talk. And so I'm going to ask him about some of the problems that we're experiencing at Rikers Island and in the country at large. I'm also going to take advantage of some of his legal expertise as well. We're going to do commendations in just a second. If you want to comment on anything we have covered today, you can give me a call at 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC, because it is now time for
The Other Side of Midnight presents Commendations.
I must begin by commending the state of Nebraska. Nebraska has the lowest unemployment rate, not only in the country, but they have the lowest unemployment rate that any state has ever recorded. That is remarkable. Nebraska reported an unemployment rate in October that no state has ever reported. The rate was 1.9% last month. This is the first time in history that a state unemployment percentage has ever fallen below 2%. I mean, you talk about impressive. I want to commend, we told you about the story with Juliet Huddy on the WABC Early News. I want to commend David Perry. David Perry is a UK taxi driver, and he is being hailed as a hero after he apparently locked a suspected terrorist in his cab before a bomb exploded in the vehicle outside of a Liverpool hospital. Very interesting. You talk about a quick-thinking cab driver. That, I don't know if this was an Uber or a conventional taxi, but that's an Uber driver that deserves a 5-star rating. I mean, really. Really, really, really. Very, very impressive. That is an all-star driver. All right. Okay, I want to commend as well our former program director here at the radio station, Dave Labrosi, who I've been working for the last 13 months and have really learned a great deal from. And it was announced this past week that he is going to be the new brand manager at KDKA News in Pittsburgh. KDKA, of course, is the first radio station in history, and it's a legendary station. And he's from the Pennsylvania area, so I'm sure it'll be a good opportunity for him to be with family and to go back home and do that thing. So he is overseeing the content strategy, talent operations, and branding for the radio station starting on November 29th. So I have to tell you, I've grown to like Dave quite a bit. I've been very impressed with his abilities as a program director, and I've enjoyed working with him a great deal over the course of the last year. He's got a lot of experience in radio. Before he was at WABC, he was the program director at WPLJ, 95.5 FM. So he's got a lot of experience in both music, talk, and sports, and I'm wishing him the very best, and I'm happy to give him a commendation. I want to give a commendation as well to one of the newest humans on the face of the earth. That would be the one and only Ariana Idala, who was born Wednesday evening at 7:23 p.m., weighing in at 7.4 pounds. She is the daughter, the first daughter of my friend Arthur Idala and his beautiful wife Marianne. Of course, the granddaughter of one of our most devoted listeners, Chick Idala. And she is gorgeous. And I couldn't be happier for Arthur, Marianne, and the entire Idala family. The person I'm happiest for is Ariana, because after all, she's living now. She's a human being, which is really a wonderful thing when you think about it. Wishing Ariana Idala the best of luck. All right, I want to give a commendation as well to Shohei Ohtani, the American League MVP, who remarkably was voted on as the MVP unanimously. So this season, it was an incredible season. What he has been able to do as both a pitcher and a hitter, this is one of the best seasons that any player has had in history. It's no surprise to me that he was voted on as the MVP. 46 home runs, and made 23 starts as a pitcher. He's not a 5-tool player. He's a 6-tool player. I don't know that we've seen a player have a season like this since Babe Ruth. The guy is not just a great pitcher. The guy is not just a great home run hitter, but he also steals bases. The guy hits triple. I mean, the guy is incredible. Do you ever remember the movie The Rookie with Albert Brooks and Brendan Fraser? It's not a great movie, but it's fun to watch if you're a baseball fan. And one of my issues with that movie is I thought it was so unrealistic for a baseball player to be that good. The Steve Nebraska character, played by Brendan Fraser. Well, I was wrong, because Shohei Ohtani is that good. He is this generation's Babe Ruth. I want to commend Journey Nelson, 9-year-old Journey Nelson, a Florida girl who is being hailed as a hero by local police after fighting off a robber earlier this month by slugging him in the face after he tried heisting her mother's purse. This is one tough little girl. Don't mess with my mom. She's also pretty cute. If you look at her picture She's wonderful. I mean, this is a great, great girl. West Palm Beach police officials honored her for her bravery. A 9-year-old girl ran to her mother's defense when a man attempted a daytime robbery. The man was later charged with robbery and battery. And I'm hoping they throw the book at this creep. I want to commend as well, and this was a great front page story in the New York Post today. I want to commend these journalists that did a tremendous job getting this pervert teacher fired. The student journalists at New York City's Townsend Harris High School, they helped get fired a teacher named Joseph Canzanieri, who brought a girl to an apartment where he plied her with wine and marijuana before they had intercourse and other sexual things. And the special commissioner of investigation for city schools recommended that he be fired. And the Department of Education tried to do so, but the girl refused to testify at the hearing. So the case was dropped, and he was entitled to keep his job because he was a tenured teacher. So after more than a year in a rubber room, a space where accused teachers await the disciplinary process, he quietly returned to Townsend Harris High School at the start of the school year in September. The principal, thankfully, somebody's got a brain over there. The principal kept him out of classrooms in an office. The guy's sitting there getting paid this whole time. So the scandal remained completely under wraps. Nobody knew about it until 3 weeks ago when someone leaked the case to teen journalists at the school's student newspaper, The Classic. Known for aggressive reporting, the paper has run a series of articles in the last year on 6 former students who claimed sexual contact with 3 Townsend Harris teachers. Cases all kept secret at the time. The unnamed teachers no longer work at the school. The editors have called for greater openness and training on educator sexual misconduct. In light of this campaign, an anonymous concerned parent sent this bombshell on this teacher, Joseph Canzanieri. So these journalists spotted him in the building and they ran with this story. So kudos to all these journalists, Ryan Eng, Jasmine Palma, and Julia Masijek. Masijek, I'm assuming. I don't know. It's a weird spelling. But I agree with what they're saying. It is past time for greater transparency about what has gone on at Townsend Harris and for the DOE and school administration to engage students and families in an honest, open conversation about the horrific allegations that they've reported on. Amen. Great job by these journalists. And I think that it's a shame that it's so hard to fire a teacher that would do this with a student. But I think that, you know, this is why journalism is so important. Not just student journalism, but all journalism. Because imagine if these journalists weren't out there. Who would know about this? I want to commend the grape. Yes, the good old-fashioned grape. The grape, according to a new study, is the number one best fruit to eat for your gut health. This is great news. There are a lot of health benefits from grapes. High fiber content and phytochemicals called catechins. Catechins are known to help with inflammation in the body, but they can also promote good bacteria in the gut. And so they had this UCLA study that just came out, and participants consumed 46 grams of grape powder per day. That's equal to about 2 servings of whole grapes. And after 4 weeks, there was not only a trending decrease of LDL cholesterol, that's your bad cholesterol, by 5.9%, but the diversity of the participants' gut microbiome significantly grew. So if you want lower bad cholesterol, and more healthy gut bacteria, then the thing that you want to do is to eat grapes. I want to give a posthumous commendation to Art LaFleur. Art LaFleur was a terrific character actor. I was a big fan of his work. His most famous role was probably playing Babe Ruth in the movie The Sandlot. And he has been one of those actors that's in all sorts of movies and that you always recognize, but you never know his name. And he's been around since the 1970s. And he has passed away after a battle with Parkinson's disease. And finally, I want to commend one anonymous patron at the Colonnade Diner on Highland Boulevard in Staten Island, because they really did something very nice. And I love hearing stories like this. And that's why I love highlighting them. An anonymous patron was paid for everyone's meal at the Colonnade Diner. A diner full of customers was treated to a free meal, and the owner wants to track down the patron who footed the bill. So on Saturday morning, a customer at the Colonnade Diner, and I've had many Saturdays there, told the waitress to collect everyone else's check. He then picked up all the tabs, which came to $2,500 for the 50 or so people that were eating there. Now, this is a nice thing. I love it. Imagine how great a feeling that is. You're having breakfast, and all of a sudden you learn breakfast is now for free. One of Sean Connery's great anecdotes and observations in the movie Finding Forrester was that there's nothing better than an unexpected gift at an unexpected time. I so agree with that. And that's certainly true when it comes to a free meal, an unexpected gift at an unexpected time. And it's nice. He was not somebody that was looking for any credit, was not somebody that was looking for any fame on this. He just wanted to do a nice thing, and he did. It's wonderful. 800-848-WABC. If you want to comment on anybody that I've commended, we're going to talk to Dom Crispino in about 10 minutes. It's 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Mark in the Bronx. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Frank.
Hello, Mark.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to make a comment, what you said about in the Kennedy assassination, the Officer Tippit.
Yes.
I had heard, now, you know, many times we just take for granted what they said happened, of course, and many hosts do that on your station, other stations, but specifically with Tippit, I had heard, and if you get an expert on at some point again, whenever, maybe you can ask, I'd heard there were witnesses that saw two men kill Tippit, and of course, if that ever was true, the whole thing is, of course, collapsed with all the other evidence that people have pointed out. And I don't know what happened with these witnesses. As you know, many witnesses disappeared, you know, were taken out, disappeared. Over, and people have talked about that. Waitresses at the club where Ruby worked and other witnesses. So maybe they were afraid to come forward. But maybe you could find out, or when you speak to someone, if you do, that there were witnesses that saw two men take out, which, of course, you know, completely knocks out the whole theory that Oswald killed Tippit also. And of course, it's brilliant to have to say that, to show, you know, what a murderer he was. If you have him taking out just an innocent policeman along with the president.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. And look, I think Jim Garrison was one of the people that never bought the official story when it came to Oswald. So it's possible. Look, there are other people that say that Tippit himself was a conspirator and he was supposed to kill Oswald, and that whoever was involved in this assassination, whether it was the mob or right-wing politicians, that he was supposed to kill Oswald to cover up the search for the other assassins. I don't know that I believe that. So take it for what it is. 800-848-WABC. Charlie is in Hell's Kitchen. Hello, Charlie.
Hey, Frank, I want to talk about the Kennedy assassination, too. And I was wondering if you ever had on the extra Dr. Cyril Weck, if you heard of him. He's a doctor.
Yes, I've had him on. I think we spoke about the Kennedy assassination last time I had him on. I know I spoke with him about the Robert Kennedy assassination. I don't remember if we spoke about John F. Kennedy. I'll have to dig up that interview. Maybe yeah. I'll play some highlights for you tomorrow.
Sure, that would be great. I've heard him talk about it, and he talks about it. The use of physics, just a simple use of physics, that's a single bullet theory that Senator Arlen Specter of the Warren Commission came up with is just physically impossible. And this puts into play a second shooter, which means, you know, a conspiracy. And I think Dr. Cyril Weck, who's both a doctor and a lawyer and an expert in this subject, I think he's just great. And I think he definitively puts on the board and proves a second shooter. And I wonder a comment on my uncle told me that the one of something previous caller said was accurate, that not everybody was upset at the time. The media tends to look upon our memories, kind of draw the picture that we want to have. But like he said, like the girls at the Catholic school, especially the Irish girls, they were like hysterical and really, really upset. But there were some other people, and I guess you're right to say there were miserable people in every generation. But there were people who were laughing and happy and glad that it happened. I mean, it sounds terrible, but I guess there are people like that in every generation. I guess you would agree with that.
I certainly would. I certainly would, Charlie. And Dr. Cyril Wecht is not just an authority on the Kennedy assassination and the single bullet theory. And I share his contention, by the way. But if memory serves, and again, maybe I'll invite Dr. Wecht back on this show because I'm a big fan of his as well. I read his book and it's really interesting. If memory serves, Dr. Wecht was actually one of the forensic pathologists that consulted for the Warren Commission. And he was the only forensic pathologist that dissented on the issue of the single bullet theory. And I briefly interned at the Fox News Channel just for a few months, and I worked on a special called JFK Case Not Closed. And as part of that special, I got to help prepare the interview for that documentary with both Dr. Cyril Wecht and Dr. Michael Bodden. Both brilliant men. Dr. Bodden believes the single bullet theory. Dr. Wecht does not. So, you know, those guys are brilliant guys, and to hear them debate the single bullet theory and its likelihood was fascinating. Fascinating as somebody that came into this sort of open-minded, meaning was there a conspiracy, was there not? In part, as a result of my research on that project, I've come to the belief that there was a conspiracy. I can't tell you who was responsible the way others can, but I think based on the acoustics, the evidence support that there were multiple shooters. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. We're going to talk with my friend Dom Crispino in about 5 minutes. Let me first say hello, though, to Carol in New Jersey. Hello, Carol.
Hi there, Frank. I remember that day very well because I was in kindergarten and I came home from school and I noticed that it was unusually quiet outside. And I got home, and my mother was sitting in front of the television crying. And I said, Mommy, why are you crying? I had no idea that Kennedy had even gotten shot. And she said, but that the president was killed. I mean, I was totally shocked. I had no idea.
Yeah, obviously, I think most people were shocked if they weren't involved in the assassination plot itself.
Yeah. But they wouldn't tell us in school, of course, because we were too young, or they thought we were too young, I would think.
All right, Carol. Well, I appreciate you sharing that. Thank you very much. 800-848-WABC. Dom Crispino joining me in just a minute. Hey, let me tell you about something that you can do for your health. GetTheTea.com. Life Change Tea is a phenomenal product. It is a gentle daily cleanse that tastes great and works to get things moving. It keeps you regular, if you know what I mean. Stress can wreak havoc on our digestive tract, and if you are feeling stopped up and bloated, that is never a good thing. Life Change Tea is all natural, no GMOs, no preservatives. One package will last you an entire month. It's only available by logging on to the website getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. You can use the promo code Frank for free shipping. Promo code Frank, free shipping anywhere in the country. It is time to feel relief. While you're there, meaning on GetTheTea.com, check out all their other great products designed for your optimum health. Don't miss out. Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com. It is the tea that makes you go. Makes you go in terms of energy, and it makes you go to the bathroom if that's something that you need help with. GetTheTea.com, promo code Frank.
77 WABC.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Love Karma Chameleon from Boy George and the Culture Club. And it's funny, you listen to the lyrics of the song, you hear the lead singer say, "I'm a man without conviction." That could actually be said partially of our next guest, because he did have a conviction and it was just vacated. It was just thrown out. So he is now quite literally a man without conviction. Well, I am very, very pleased to be joined this morning by my friend Dominic Crispino. He's one of the more interesting people that I've ever encountered. He is a former attorney who then went to prison, did a few years in prison, and then was a radio commentator and a legal commentator. And then in 2017, he's involved in another case. And his conviction, he's convicted again, sentenced to 22 years in prison. That conviction was just overturned, and he is now out of prison doing his thing. Dom, thanks for getting up early for us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Frank. Yeah. Where else can you get on a show where you can have ping pong and the Kennedy assassination at the same time? Amazing.
That's what makes this show so special. That's what makes this show so special. Now, Dominic, I don't want to get into your particular case just because, one, I know there might be another trial, and you may have to be careful what you say. And I know it's a little complicated. So just to explain it would take more time than we have in the time allotted. But I want to take advantage of your experience as both a criminal and an attorney. Some people say those are two sides of the same coin. I'll let them be their own judge. First, in terms of your legal acumen, and you were a very accomplished attorney, I want to get your take on the Rittenhouse verdict. Were you surprised at the Rittenhouse verdict, or did you see this one coming?
Oh, man, that one was so easy to predict. The minute you saw some of the judge's rulings and the fact that the prosecution really, quote, didn't have a smoking gun, quite literally, it was pretty clear he was going to be acquitted, especially under the laws of Wisconsin. Maybe New York he would have had a tougher time.
Well, what about the role of the judge? I've heard a couple of people that were unhappy with the verdict say, well, the judge was biased and that's why this resulted in an acquittal. Did you see that at all?
No, the judge played it straight, and that's the shocking thing. A lot of times in a high-profile case, they don't play it straight. Usually it's tilted towards the prosecution side. But this judge, he was a bit eclectic, but he got it right. I think he got it right every time, too.
If I was of the belief, and I started paying attention to this trial late. Really, the first day I started paying attention to it was the day Rittenhouse testified. But then I went back and looked at the video. I believe that the evidence was so weak here that if we weren't in the current polarized, politically charged environment that we're in, I don't think they would have ever brought this case to trial. What's your view of that?
I think you have a good point there. However, you have to look carefully where you have a couple of people shot like that. It would have to have been looked at very closely, but I tend to agree with you. It shouldn't have been brought when they really looked at it. You know, there's nothing saying, you know, murder doesn't have a statute of limitations on it. So, I mean, in a case where, you know, it's complicated, they could actually have sat back and looked at it and tried to develop evidence and try to evaluate the evidence properly. And they probably would have reached the conclusion that you've reached, and I would have reached, that it really wasn't a case. But in here, obviously, the politics required that they move in a quick fashion, if not only to prevent people from rioting, you know. But of course, that seems that it's always going to occur no matter what happens.
Well, so it's so interesting that you mentioned that, right? So we've already seen both peaceful protests and violent protests erupt since this decision in cities all over the country. 1,000 people were out there marching in Chicago. It's certainly possible that you might see another instance like this in the future. What do you think this acquittal means for future prosecutions? Do you think this will make a future DA or a future grand jury a little bit less likely to indict, seeing what's happened with Rittenhouse here?
Well, listen, it's, as I said before, it's all politics, Frank. The prosecutor will probably, I mean, there are prosecutors. I mean, there was another one in Wisconsin, I think, who chose, I forget the name of the case, who chose not to bring a case last year as well, under circumstances like this. I can't see, though, most prosecutors not falling to the political pressure. And as you know, they can indict a ham sandwich. It's the easiest thing in the world to get an indictment. So if they make the decision, that's what they're going to get. You know, that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I spoke with Judge Wachtler, the man who coined that term, indicting a ham sandwich, and he says he doesn't know why he picked ham sandwich, and he doesn't believe that a ham sandwich is any more or less guilty than any other type of lunch meat. But I think his mother told him that he should have said corned beef sandwich instead, because that's a much more innocuous meat than ham sandwiches. Now, let me get your take.
The ham sandwich is healthier.
I guess so. What do you think this prosecution means and this acquittal means, if anything, for the case of Ahmed Arbery? That's another case that's been sort of politically charged, that's also very polarizing. That the evidence in that case seems to look a little bit different than it did in the Rittenhouse case. What's your take on the Arbery case?
It's a stronger case, obviously. It could turn on the interpretation of that particular statute. If I recall correctly, these guys are claiming they were making a citizen's arrest, which is like one of the strangest concepts in the law, and it kind of went wrong at that point. I don't know. That kind of explanation doesn't really seem to be true. I mean, you know, Rittenhouse, you have a 17-year-old stupid kid who's got a gun, who wants to do something, and, you know, finds himself in a situation where he finds these really bad guys. I mean, yeah, one of these guys was a child molester, and these guys were going to take that gun from him, you know? And, unfortunately for those guys, they ran into the wrong 17-year-old.
Yeah, clearly. We're talking with Dominic Crispino. He's an ex-attorney and an ex-convict whose most recent conviction was recently vacated. Dominic, do you know the status of your case? Are you going to have to go on trial again, or have you gotten any indication from the DA's office about what they intend to do?
There's no indication yet. They're appealing the appeal right now. They're trying to appeal it, and I think there's a 99.9% chance that that'll just be, you know, they won't even take it from the highest court. And then we'll have to deal with the case itself.
All right, so we'll see. Stay tuned.
Yeah. I mean, when it's over, I'll be glad to talk to you about
it. Wonderful. Great. Now, how long ago were you at Rikers Island, and how long did you end up staying there?
Well, initially, I was there for 22 months pre-trial because they had a bail of over $1 million on me, which I could not make. And then I was convicted and I went upstate for 4 years. And then when the conviction was vacated, they had to bring me back down. So I traveled through Rikers Island again for a day and a half. And I got to tell you, everything you read about what's going on at Rikers, I saw in that day and a half.
So the first time you were there, the 22-month stretch that you did, that was beginning around when? 2016, 2017?
Yeah, it was the end of 2015 to about the summer of 2017.
Okay, so then your most recent trip to Rikers, that was in the year 2021?
Yes, two months ago.
All right, so you have a pretty good frame of reference from, you know, over that six-year span. By the way, can you confirm that that we do indeed have a lot of listeners in Rikers Island?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Frank. You are one of the favorite shows, especially the guys who can't sleep, you know?
Wonderful. That's what we like to hear. A big shout-out to everybody listening at Rikers and the Tombs and in federal lockup as well at the MDC and the MCC. We're very proud to be number one with the prison population and the jail population. Absolutely. Now, did you notice a significant degradation in the quality of life, for lack of a better term, at Rikers from the first time you were there in 2015, 2016, to when you spent your day and a half there this year?
Yes, significant difference. And it was pretty bad back then as well, but at least it was more doable. Right now, I was there, like I said, a day and a half. I saw an assault on an officer. I saw about in a unit I was put into at the Rikers Island has 10 jails. It's not just one jail.
Sure.
I was at EMTC and I saw so many guys getting high with drugs they brought in. And like I said, one of them tried to beat an officer up. It was crazy. I was only there for a couple hours, you know.
How bad would you describe the situation being in terms of violence among the inmates themselves? One of the things that we've heard a lot about is the issue of gangs within the jails at Rikers. Did you notice any of that? Was there a lot of violence, inmate on inmate violence?
Well, there is. I mean, I wasn't there that long the second time. I saw it the first time. It was pretty prevalent back then, too. I mean, and it is gangs, Frank. That is the problem. It's the gang. The gangs run the place. It's a different situation in the upstate prisons. Some of the prisons upstate, the gangs have sway and others they don't. But in the city, the gangs run the prisons, that's for sure. And it's the same problem on the outside as to why the crime rate's going up. It's all gang related, Frank.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what about the situation? You mentioned that one officer that was assaulted. What did you observe in terms of the situation either the first time you were there for the 22-month stretch or on your day and a half, you know, revisit down there about the level of violence between the correction officers and the inmates? Aside from inmates attacking correction officers, did you observe any pattern of correction officers assaulting inmates?
No, I didn't see that at all. And on this, even the officer who was assaulted on my return, my short return, they actually were very gentle with the guy who was attacking them. He was high, you know. He had taken something. I'm not seeing them responding in a way that, you know, you would have heard years ago that they would have responded, you know.
How prevalent are drugs in the jails at Rikers Island? How much drug use is going on? How rampant is it?
It's all over. Even upstate, by the way. It's not just the city. These knockoffs, the K2, the synthetic drugs, all over the place upstate. It's touched
all age groups. I saw guys who were 80 taking it, guys who were 18 taking it, just walking like their feet were stuck in mud. I've seen guys who got zombies who didn't move for hours up there. Same thing in Rikers. Even in that very short stay, I saw about 18, 20 guys with the same look on their face, the same reaction. It's all over.
And which prison were you at upstate again? Was it Clinton Correctional?
I was at Clinton at the Annex, which is now closed. I was at Eastern in Napanac in Ulster County. And then I was at Fishkill when I got my reversal. Fishkill's in Dutchess County.
So at this point, Dominic, I think you should probably just carry like a passport book with you for all the prisons and jails you visit. Have them stamp it every time you visit a new prison. But at the facilities upstate and at Rikers, were you able to determine where the contraband was coming from? Because it's not just drugs. There's also a big problem, at least at Rikers, with stabbings and slashing. So there are weapons that are making their way in there as well. Where is the contraband coming from?
My best guess from the city and from what I observed my first go around. Some of that, I think, is either the correctional officers or civilian employees. Upstate, I'm not so sure because I think there's a lot less of that. I think it might be on visits. It might be stuff that comes in through the mail that's tucked away in a certain way. I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on contraband. And that's not my thing. But definitely in the city, I think a lot of that is staff. I mean, there have been numerous arrests over the years, cooks, counselors, officers bringing in weapons, drugs, whatnot. Now in the city, they're getting a lot of help.
It seems like it. Talking with Dom Crispino, one of the sadder aspects of the situation at Rikers that we've been hearing a lot about is a lot of these inmates who have been killing themselves. Is there any specific cause that you can attribute this to? Is there a failure in terms of mental health treatment? Is this tied in to the kind of abuse that some of these inmates are being forced to deal with? Does it have to do with the drugs? Anything you could recommend that would stem the tide of these inmate suicides?
Well, I think they have to screen them better mental health wise. They do a better job of that upstate, that's for sure. But in the city, I mean, they're it's a revolving door. You have your guys who are there for trials and guys cycling through making bail. They don't screen properly, and I think that in a prison population or even a detainee population like in Rikers Island, there's a significant portion of guys who have problems, should be taking medication, should be getting some counseling. And I think that in situations where they were locked in a box for a long time, you know, in segregated housing, or they're stuck in a situation where, let's say, they're buying drugs from guys and owe them money, and then, you know, they get caught in situations, you know, they'll start acting out. It's a typical pattern, you know. That's been one of the bugaboos in the criminal justice system, not being able to deal with the mental health problems. If you solve the mental health problems, you probably knock out about half your problems right there.
Wow. Now, Mayor de Blasio has been very, very adamant that he wants to close the jails at Rikers and replace the jails at Rikers with four borough-based jails in every borough except Staten Island. I'm not exactly clear what Eric Adams' plan is in that respect, but I haven't heard any reversal, of course, from that plan. As somebody that's been there and spent a substantial amount of time there, what's your view? Do you think Rikers should close?
Yeah, I think it should. I think it should. I understand the idea that you can fix it, and maybe you can. I think they've tried it. I've tried it many times. I think the plan is if you split them up, you might have better controls.
I don't know. I don't know if that would work, but I mean, it's worth a try, although it's going to cost billions of dollars, I think, ultimately. But, you know, corrections in any state, in any city, it's just like a black hole. You keep tossing money into it, you know, and nothing good comes of it.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
Yeah.
What other recommendations would you make to policymakers, the Department of Corrections, inmate advocates, whomever, about how to improve conditions at Rikers? So you have better mental health screenings. You have what else would you do differently if they made you a corrections commissioner for a day or a week? What would you do to clean things up, given the existing confines, or even if we're talking about multiplying it to the four other boroughs?
Well, first of all, as I mentioned before, I think you're going to have to get some effective mental health screening initially, and with follow up. And I think the answer does not lie in more manpower. I think the ratio of officers to inmates at this point is like better than 1-to-1. So the manpower is there. I think maybe better screening of officers. You know, one of the problems we've had in probably the last 25 years is we've increased hiring of prosecutors, more judges, more cops, more correction officers. And what's happened, in my opinion, is in order to fill all these slots, we've had to reach deeper down into the population of people who really shouldn't be holding these positions. And I think we paid a price for that. You know, you get some increased corruption in correction officers. You get maybe more brutality in police officers. You'd get prosecutors who maybe more overzealous and not just following ethical rules. You have judges who are looking to put people in jail instead of trying to solve the problems to why somebody is doing the things they're doing, so they won't go to jail anymore and hurt someone else next time. I think what we've done is we've kind of scraped the bottom in all these aspects of our system. And, you know, that's I don't know how you solve that one at this point. Maybe, you know, you make the system smaller.
Now, that's very interesting, and I have to confess it's not something that I've heard from many other people. Talking with Dominic Crispino, do you have a theory, and I know this is a little out of left field, but the corrections officers of all the uniformed services, sanitation, police, firefighter, et cetera, out of all the uniformed services in the city, the Department of Corrections have by far the most officers who are unvaccinated. Only a little more than half of the staff of the Department of Corrections is vaccinated. And I have been scratching my head trying to figure out why that's the case, why people who are in a position to be so much more likely to be exposed, and you're in close quarters with so many different people, why so many of them seem not to want to get vaccinated. Do you have any theory as to why that's the case?
I don't. It's a mystery. But let me tell you something about correctional officers generally. And, you know, I met many of them who are really hardworking and family people, and a lot of them genuinely concerned about the health and welfare of their charges, you know, the inmates. Correctional officers have always been a different breed. They, among all the uniformed services in the city, they always had the highest arrest rate, the highest conviction rate of crimes. I mean, we're not talking about tremendous numbers, but they always were the leaders in that. And I got that from guys I knew who were counsel to their union, you know, where the union provided representation. You know, they had more DWIs. Maybe it's the stress of that job. I don't know. I don't know why they don't want to get vaccinated. That doesn't make any sense because you're in the dragon's lair
right,
there.
Right, you know? Exactly. That's what I have been scratching my head and trying to figure out. Lastly, Dominic, having been in several prison facilities upstate and then having spent a lot of time at jails at Rikers, are there any other tips that you think the people running New York City's jail system can learn from the folks that run some of New York State's prisons? Are there any other things other than maybe better mental health screenings and a better job preventing staff members from bringing in things like drugs? Any other tips that you think the city's jail system can learn from the state's prison system?
Well, I mean, they're two different animals.
The state system has more of a static population, you know, that there's turnover, but it's much smaller turnover because usually sentences are measured in years. Rikers and the city system are detainees, and a lot of those detainees are very short term. I mean, I was a long term there. You know, I was there 22 months waiting for trial and sentencing and, you know, whatnot. But there are others like that. Some of them, some guys there 4 or 5 years. But for the most part, it's a quicker turnover. So I don't know if the population measures up where you can take lessons from the state system and apply them directly to the city system. Also, a convicted prisoner who's serving a sentence has, quote, less rights than a pretrial detainee because you're not convicted of anything at that point. So some of the sanctions that they can use, or, you know, the stick instead of the carrot that they could use upstate, they really can't use in a local setting, a county jail setting, you know, a city setting.
Interesting. That's good to know. Dominic, I appreciate your expertise. I appreciate you getting up early, and keep us posted on your case. And we may call upon you from time to time to weigh in on some legal issues or some issues related to the criminal justice system in general.
Anytime, Frank.
Thank you. Dominic Crispino. You can check him out. He's not on social media, so you can check him out on this show where he appears exclusively. If you want to comment, 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Comment on any portion of my conversation with Dominic Crispino. You're welcome to. In the meantime, one of the things when I saw Dominic when he came out of prison, one of the things that I was amazed by is how svelte the guy looked. The guy looked great. Now, I am not going to go to prison and eat all that horrible food if I can help it. I'm not going to go to prison just to lose weight. So I have put on a lot of weight, and I am determined to take this weight off. And that's where Mitch Suss and the folks at the Skinny Center come in. The Skinny Center in Westchester County, they have an incredible track record, and they've done a great job with my colleague, Greg Kelly. So after researching other weight loss programs and seeing how great Greg Kelly looks, my decision was made for me. So I'm looking forward to going through their exclusive lab testing that tells you why you can't take off weight. But until then, Mitch Suss has sent me a terrific product that helps control cravings and so forth. And it's called Skinny Spritz. I'm amazed by this product. A few spritzes, your appetite is suppressed. Mitch told me that a lot of patients are using Skinny Spritz to help adhere to their program, or just to make sure they don't overeat during the holidays. The hardest part is getting started, and this product gives you a bit of a jump start. Call the Skinny Center at 914-703-4811. That's 914-703-4811, or you can go to theskinnycenter.com. That's theskinnycenter.com.
WABC. When you support City Harvest, you do more than just provide hundreds of millions of pounds of food to millions of hungry New Yorkers. You feed hope for a kid up in Parkchester. You feed confidence for a first-in-her-family Queens College freshman. You feed community for folks in Canarsie Park. You feed compassion for retired Staten Island nurses who continue to serve. You feed strength for office workers in Manhattan. When you support City Harvest, you feed good. Support us at cityharvest.org.
Gold and silver prices are at an all-time high. If you have any gold, silver, or platinum coins, bullion, Franklin mint items, diamonds, jewelry, art, antiques, paintings, French furniture, or any Tiffany items, sterling flatware, Judaica, oriental rugs, older baseball cards, sports and entertainment memorabilia, watches, especially better watches, such as Rolex, Patek Philippe, Vacheron, Tiffany, IWC, Cartier, Bulgari, just to name a few. They will buy them all at the highest cash prices in any condition, even broken. They also need any designer jewelry, such as Cartier, Tiffany, Buccellati, Van Cleef, Harry Winston, and Bulgari. Now is the time to cash out at the world-famous APR 57 Gallery on 57th Street in New York City, across from Carnegie Hall. They can also come to your home and do certified insurance appraisals. So if you have anything of value, call them for a free appraisal and high cash offer at 212-246-2000. That's 212-246-2000. Or toll-free at 1-800-772-0054.
77 WABC, All-American.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Well, look who has sauntered into the studio control room at 3:56 in the morning. It's none other than our former telephone talent coordinator, who's now onto bigger and better things, Gabby Lopez.
How are we doing, guys?
We're doing well. What are you doing here at 4 o'clock in the morning?
I'm starting to do video. Starting to video produce for the early news, the show that you and Juliet do in the morning. We're trying to get the cameras going for it.
Okay. Yeah. So you're going to come in this time of day every day?
Yep.
I thought you abandoned our show because you couldn't. You didn't like to deal with these crazy hours. But if you're going to come in during these crazy hours, you should start working on our show again.
Right? That's what I'm saying. I miss you guys a lot. I miss all you guys, all the callers that used to call in and all that stuff.
Who do you miss most?
Probably Andy B.
Ah, who do you miss least?
Gary from Staten Island.
Ah, there you go. He's got quite a reputation.
Yep. Well,
right. Well, feel free to do some phone screening while you're here.
Of course.
Molly's running around doing all sorts of things. So,
awesome.
All right. Thank you, Gabby.
Have a good rest of your
good
show.
Good to see you. Great to see you. 800-848-WABC if you want to comment on anything we're talking about. Also on Facebook at facebook.com/MoranoFan. And we have a Facebook group, which you're welcome to join. If you just type in facebook.com/groups/RadioMorano. In the meantime, hey, next hour, I am very excited. We're going to talk with a terrific investigator by the name of Douglas Johnson. I don't know how the mainstream media has missed this, but Kirsten Gillibrand, Democrat, Marco Rubio, Republican, they have teamed up to offer an amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act, which would totally reform how we report UFOs. And it may make its way into the final bill. We'll see. We're going to talk with him. He is a bright guy. And I will tell you, so I'm very excited about this new baseball team, the Staten Island Ferry Hawks. And they had me be the narrator for the opening video. And I said to my wife, well, wouldn't it be fun if I were the PA announcer? Because I think I could get hired as the PA announcer. The general manager is a friend of mine. The owner of the team is a friend of mine. And she said, no, 62 home games. You already don't have time to do anything. And then I was kind of pressing her. I said, you know, honey, I really think it would be so much fun. And she said, all right, maybe if you give me half your money. This way I can hire a husband to spend time with our child since you're never going to be home. So lo and behold, I don't think I'm going to be doing that. Hey, we'll get into parenting and grandparenting in just a moment. Until next hour, your influence counts. So use it.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Tired yet. I love that song. And apparently on the Facebook group, a lot of people do as well. It's great. It's great. Come on. And you know, I've told you this story before, so forgive me. I stole this song from Curtis Sliwa. See, Curtis Sliwa used to do this time slot. He used to be on 2 to 6 a.m. And that was his top of the hour theme. I think it was every hour. It was certainly the beginning of the show. And I think he did it every hour. And I said to myself, I was so into it. It's from the Swan Silvertones. I said to myself, if I ever get to do an overnight show, I'm going to play that going into the last hour of the show every time. Because there's just something that really gets you going with this song. It's really terrific. You know, it's interesting. You know who was critiquing my musical taste on Friday? And shame on him. But it's the same fella who was critiquing my ping pong playing ability the other day. New York City Council Minority Leader Joe Borelli. Now, Joe is already off to a great start as the Minority Leader. He's done some great things in terms of reforming the Board of Elections and some other things that the public may not pay that much attention to, but that those of us that follow New York City politics closely take notice of. And he's done some great things, and he's, again, one of my closest friends. But he was filling in for Joe Piscopo Friday morning on AM 970, and he and his colleague, my former colleague, Al Gattulo, get on the subject of music. And listen to these two. Listen to Heckle and Jekyll here.
But I don't like what you said about Frank. Frank has no musical judgment whatsoever.
I think sometimes he does. I don't care for a lot of the stuff.
What do you
plays?
Mean he has bad judgment?
Yeah,
or
the music that he likes, I don't think is that great.
Oh, I love Frank's music.
But he likes Fits in the Tantrums. That's not bad.
Yes.
Yeah, no, really?
I don't think it's that great.
Okay.
I mean, look, I listen to his show, as I know many of us do. And, you know, some of his bumper music, I just don't even get it.
Some of it's questionable.
The theme
all right,
music
I'll give you that.
Of the After Midnight, it's some smooth jazz kind of.
See,
thing.
I love that, though.
I know.
I like his
this
4 o'clock.
This is why I'm single.
See, I like his 4 o'clock music because it's, you know, I'm Not Tired Yet. I like that song.
Yeah, I mean.
But I'll never play it on here because it's on.
But then he does the Enter Sandman every hour, you know, and I feel like he could be a little bit more creative there. I mean, once a show, maybe. Enter Sandman, once a show.
This isn't the Frank Moreno show, so we can.
No, it's not. It's, you know,
Frank who?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, the Enter Sandman that you hear, not every hour, but 3 out of the 4 hours. That's not bumper music. It's the top of the hour theme. Can you picture Joe watching Cheers and say, hey, why do they play Where Everybody Knows Your Name at the beginning of each show? They should be a little more creative and mix it up a little bit. No, it's the theme music to the show. We play it at the beginning of every hour because it's the theme of the show. Yeah, I don't like that Beverly Hillbillies theme. Maybe they should try some different music at the next episode. Come on. Joe doesn't know what he's talking about. My musical taste is great. And Matt Blaze and Matt Sapienza, when he's not faking a COVID diagnosis to get out of work on a holiday week, they have also done a great job in terms of adding their own musical flair. And even Molly, who's done a great job with the news this morning as well. She's doing triple duty. She has played a tremendous helping hand in terms of the music that you hear. So it's not always selected by me because we are limited. We don't have an unlimited library of music that we can play. We have to go off of an approved music list. So a little understanding is all I'm asking here from Mr. Joe Borelli. But I appreciate Joe Sebelia, who's that other fellow that you heard there, sticking up for my musical tastes. Now, in the meantime, I have always been fascinated by something. And now there is data to show that it's true. Do you ever see the movie Nobody's Fool? With Paul Newman. It's a great film. Paul Newman, Melanie Griffith, I think Bruce Willis is in it in a supporting role. It's a great film. I haven't seen it in years. But one of the things that I remember is Paul Newman was not that good of a father to his own son. Not the real Paul Newman, the Paul Newman's character in that film. But Paul Newman becomes a very loving and affectionate grandfather to his grandson. And I have heard that time and again. I'll tell you, in my own case, I did not know my paternal grandfather. He died before I was born. That's who I was named for. But my maternal grandfather, Ralph, or Raphael, but everybody called him Ralph, my mother's father, he and I were super close. And yet, he really was not that close with either of his own children, was not close, did not have a good relationship with my uncle, didn't have the best relationship with my mother. And, you know, she always said that he was a much better grandfather than a father. And I have found that to be the case with many, many, many parents and grandparents. And I always just kind of thought, maybe it's because people get old, they soften up a little bit, they are at a different phase in their life, they learn different things, they are more eager to not repeat the same mistakes that they did with their own children, they're less busy with things like work. I always just attributed it to that. But now, there is a fascinating new study that shows that the reason grandparents, and this study primarily looked at grandmothers, but I believe it to be true of grandfathers as well, given my anecdotal experience. Grandparents are often warmer with their own grandchildren than they are with their own children. And there's a biological reason for that, according to a new study. Researchers have found, this is from Emory University in Atlanta, and the Department of Anthropology and Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at that school. The importance of grandmothers can be traced neurologically. Researchers have found that grandmothers shown images of their biological grandchildren had a neurological response in the areas of their brain that are important for emotional empathy and motivation. So this study, which was published by the journal Proceedings of the Royal Society B, I'm not familiar with this particular journal, but I looked them up. They're a real journal. They're a pretty reputable, you know, publication. They worked with 50 grandmothers who reported having positive relationships with their grandchildren and high levels of involvement with them. So these women underwent MRIs, functional magnetic resonance imaging, fMRIs, which measure changes in blood flow that happen with brain activity, while being shown images of their grandchild, images of another child they did not know, And images of an adult they didn't know, and the same-sex parent of their grandchild. For some, that was their own biological child, and for others, it was their daughter-in-law or their son-in-law. You follow? Got it. Okay. So according to Jody Pulaski, a neuroscientist and therapist who was not associated with the study, she looked at this data and the study, and she told CNN, "This work points to the fact that there are important brain changes in members of a village that raise a child. It's not just the brain of birthing parents and partners that change." And she said, and I agree with her, that's exciting. So studies have examined maternal and paternal brain functions in the past, but this is one that is one of our first glimpses into how a grandmother's brain reacts to their grandchildren. According to one of the authors of the study was partially motivated by the well-known grandmother hypothesis, which posits that human female postmenopausal longevity evolved because of the benefits grandmothers were able to bestow to their grandchildren. Isn't that fascinating? So the novelty of this study and the nature of it being early days in brain scan findings mean that the results are preliminary. So you can't take it as gospel, but I think it's pretty compelling and pretty interesting. So some results are not surprising. Grandmothers showed more of a response when they looked at their grandchildren than children they didn't know. Now that makes perfect sense. You show someone their grandchild, you show them a stranger or a stranger's child. Who do you think the brain is going to light up more for? Of course it's going to be their own grandchild. Fine. But interestingly, grandmothers showed brain activity correlated with cognitive empathy more when looking at their biological children and in-laws than their grandchildren. So when looking at their grandchildren, they showed stronger emotional empathy than they did with their own children. Emotional empathy is feeling the emotions that another person is feeling. Cognitive empathy is understanding what someone is thinking or feeling and why. So that could mean that while grandparents were wired to seek to understand their adult children's feelings, they're more geared to an emotional response when it comes to their grandchildren. So if you've ever noticed that your parent was not that good of a parent to you, but they were a great grandparent to your child, apparently that's evolutionarily hardwired into grandparents' brains. Isn't that something? Give me a call. Tell me your experience if you've ever noticed this, where someone is a better grandparent, or I don't want to say better, they're a more affectionate, more caring, more loving grandparent than they were a parent. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. That same person, Jane Pulaski, who again is not associated with the study, but analyzed the results for CNN. She said, quote, "Not only is it showing that the brain of grandmothers is activated with grandparenting, it also shows that the parental brain areas are activated late in life, or perhaps are always activated. Once a mother, always a mother. This supports and expands what others have recently reported in that there are continued effects of parenting on the brain into aging." I found this really, really interesting. 800-848-WABC. If you want to comment, that's 1-800-848-9222. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to give you an opportunity to win some money with the $1,000 minute. And I was surprised at some of the criticism of Friday's contest. Now, I would have thought we almost had a winner on Friday. We had a guy answer 9 questions, 9 out of 10. And I would have thought people would be over the moon. You see, it is possible to answer 10 questions in 60 seconds. Instead, all I heard was that the 10th question was too difficult. If you didn't hear the 10th question, it was, who was the only vice president sworn in outside of the United States? And look, I get that it's a tough question. But if you're going to win $1,000, you got to be expected to answer at least one tough question. And just because, and that's a pretty important anecdote in American history, that we've had, I don't know, 48, 50 vice presidents thereabouts, and only one of them ever was sworn in outside the United States. Doesn't it pay to know who that person is? I think it does. So just because you don't know it, doesn't make it a legitimate, doesn't mean that it's not a legitimate trivia question. I mean, I was, you know what it is? I'm just convinced people love to complain. That's the bottom line. 800-848-WABC. 800-848-9222. Speaking of trivia contests, you may recall how on Friday, I was lucky enough to be selected as the contestant in Beat Bernie. If you're not familiar with Beat Bernie, this is a terrific contest where every day at 9:40, Bernard McGurk, who is a brilliant man, he matches wits with a caller. Last week it was Steph. So the caller, Bernie goes into a soundproof room. The caller takes an opportunity to answer 5 questions and then see how many they get right. And then if they can do better than Bernie, they win a prize. And Bernie answers those same 5 questions. So it was my turn in the barrel on Friday. And I got to tell you, I was very nervous because I played this contest. I was in the contest back in August and I was shocked that I lost. Shocked that I lost. So badly. And I got questions wrong that I knew the answer to. So you get inside your head with that kind of thing. And the whole morning I was a basket case. And so Sid Rosenberg alluded to that right before I had my opportunity to play Beat Bernie.
Frank Morano.
See, when you've introduced me previously, you've said very smart, but I can tell that you have a feeling how this is going to go down, and you didn't include that in
I think you are very smart. You're smarter than me. You may be as smart as Bernie. You probably are, but in this game, I don't know.
I hear. See, all the questions are in his wheelhouse. That's the...
Well, right. They write the game purposes.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's a terrible job. With
I'm the...
Game.
Who's the team that the Harlem Globetrotters used to...
The Washington...
Washington Wizards.
Right.
I'm the Washington Wizards.
No, not the Wizards.
The Generals.
The actual basketball
Generals.
Team.
Right,
exactly.
Generals.
But you got the fighting gloves on.
Right.
You really want to win this today, don't you?
I do.
You are ready to fight.
I do. I lost back in August, so... I will be, hang my head in shame if
this
I lose two games in a row.
This loss by
it has. It has. It's given me quite a complex.
Why?
I don't know. Because I fancy myself pretty good with trivia.
Right.
Not good with much. You know. But trivia is something I'm good at.
You're very funny. Self-deprecating.
That's true.
And you did impregnate your wife.
But that is true.
So
that's
you did
what,
that right at
that's
least
what
once.
She claims.
You don't, oh,
that's
true.
She claims.
Now, what is that pin you're wearing there?
That's a New York State flag and the American flag.
How'd you get that?
I bought it.
You didn't buy it.
Yes, I did.
It's when your mobbed up Staten Island friends gave that to you. Bought it. Get out of here. All right, here we go. I think you're going to win today. What do you do?
Good.
I want you to win.
Me too.
I love Bernie, but I want you to...
So just give me the answers.
Because if you lose again, you may kill yourself.
I will. Just give me the answers. We'll tell him I didn't...
You've been sitting here for 2 hours. I could have done that. I did not do that, though.
Okay.
You wouldn't do that.
No, no.
You're not like that.
All not right, on the air, anyway.
I did ask Bobby Valentine to manage Gary Perone's team.
Well...
You know what he said?
What?
You can listen to it. He said... I can't believe you just asked me that. That guy called me yesterday. Gary Perone.
I was going to say, you weren't the first one to ask him.
He said, the GM called me yesterday. How funny he asked you that today.
Great minds think alike. Now, putting aside the general manager conversation. So that's where we were. I was very nervous going in. And everybody, so I stuck around here from the time Juliet and I left the air, 6 a.m. until 9:40. I stuck around for here 3.5 hours. Now, the more you stick around here and the closer you get to the contest, all you do is, at least all I do is just think about this contest. I'm pacing and I'm stewing and I'm nervous. And I honestly think that Matt Meany, the acting program director, saw how nervous I was and he gave five very easy questions, including one Staten Island question. So I almost think that he made it so that, I mean, he had to know we were both going to get a lot of these questions, if not all of them correct. So I ended up getting all five of these questions correct. And then I had a feeling that Bernie was getting them all right, too. So then there was some discussion. This was what transpired right before Bernie answered his questions.
Your chance to go perfect, then you can't lose.
Yes, well, I see. These are kind of easy. I'm worried Bernie may go perfect, too.
All right, let's see. War.
What is it good for?
And 25 Miles are hit singles of what 1960s to 1970s musician?
Edwin Starr.
Wow. Five for five. I don't know. How can you do any better?
You literally can't.
You think Bernie's going to get all five, too?
I think he might. And then what happens? Is there a playoff? Or?
Well, right now there's nothing
okay.
in the...
Nothing in the
But you don't
book?
Lose. Should be one question, maybe. How somebody write one question just in case Bernie gets it right?
So, if it's a tie, I mean, that's not...
No, something's a tie.
It's like kissing your sister.
Right, exactly.
And I wouldn't do that to Claudia.
Right. Would I kiss your sister?
She's probably a little young for
okay.
you.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Hey, could me and you write the question? Who's going to write it?
We'll write it in here.
All right. So here's the deal.
I don't like this.
You got to get all five right.
I already
right.
don't like this.
I know. But he got them all right.
We got to rewrite a question? What's going
no,
on?
No, no. Nothing to rewrite. If you get all five
I
right.
I think you're going to get all five.
Then we'll have a tie-breaking question, which they're writing right now. Okay? Because you got them all right.
Okay.
So the pressure's on to get them right. Then these two idiots, they're going to give us a tie question.
Why they got to be idiots?
It's Luke and Justin Ellick.
Okay.
All right. There
I'll
we
accept
go. Number
that.
One.
I like Justin Ellick a lot and Luke.
They're Thanks, both Frank. Really bright kids yes. and very smart and very nice.
So lo and behold, Bernie gets them all right. As as I knew he would. These were pretty easy questions. One was about the prison in Ossining, New York. One was about the year of the California Gold Rush. One was about the landfill on Staten Island. And one was the question you just heard me answer about Edwin Starr. I don't remember the fifth one, but they were all super easy. Honestly, I think most people, if you're decent at trivia, would have got them all right. Bernie, of course, gets them all right. This is what transpires.
All right, so we got a tie.
The guy's unbeatable. He's unbeatable.
What are you doing here, Adam?
Well, I mean, I can ask him. I can ask him real quick. They're just
yeah, but
just short
you can't ask him in the same room at the same
time. We're both here.
Oh, that's true,
Doofus.
That's true.
You want to give it just to Bernie?
I say this. I say it ends in the tie. We got to bring Frank back.
All right. Hey.
Okay. Fine.
At least that.
You okay
lose.
With that?
He I like lose. That. Yeah, yeah.
Let's just bring them back. They both played great. They're both really smart.
And by the way, we're worthy of a higher caliber question, maybe.
It's too easy for these two guys. These two may be the two smartest guys in the place. To be completely honest, two smartest guys in the place. You got to make it more difficult.
I think the total time accumulated between question and answer on all five questions between the both of them was like 20 seconds.
I agree.
Maybe.
I agree. They're both really smart. So... we'll have to do it again, boys.
Way to go, Frankie.
Well, I am honored not to lose to you. So does that mean I get a $50 barrel of coffee?
Yes, yes. Thing? It goes down by increments every time. So if you tie again, then it's 25, then it's 12.50, then it's 6.25.
Thank you. So we ended in a tie. So I'm hoping for another rematch. And now I won't be as nervous because I have a little bit of an ego boost that I was able to get all five. So I'm hoping I'll have a little bit more relaxed contest the next time I get to play Beat Bernie, because that was a lot of fun. I was really happy that I got to go 5 for 5, happy that I didn't lose. It's almost better than win. Maybe I'll do like Jerry Seinfeld in that Seinfeld episode where he chooses never to run again after he won that supposed race and developed this reputation as such a big runner. Maybe I'll do that. Well, I'm the guy that got five questions right. I don't need to compete again. Maybe that's what I'll do. We'll see. All right. We're going to do the $1,000 minute in just a minute. And then I'm really looking forward to talking with a researcher who's done a tremendous, tremendous job, Douglas Johnson. He writes about UFOs or UAPs, whatever you want to call it. And he follows very closely what's happening in Congress on this subject. And he was able to break down a story that I didn't see anywhere else in the press. And it has to do with the upcoming vote on the National Defense Authorization Act. So we're going to get into that in a big way in just a few minutes. Diane is in Brooklyn. Hello, Diane.
Hi, Frank. I wanted to ask you about the vice president question.
Yes, please.
Okay. I have two questions. First question is, when did you learn that? And how did you learn that question?
I learned about it in, I want to say, 1996. I was watching 1995. I was watching a show called The Critic, which was a great animated sitcom starring John Lovitz. And they have his father is played by is a guy named Franklin Sherman. And Franklin Sherman was a wealthy guy that's into politics. And he was talking about he was going to be someone's running mate for vice president. And he talks about being the most useless running mate or the most useless vice president since William Rufus Duvain King. And they mentioned something about William Rufus Duvain King. And I said, well, is that a real person? Sure enough, I looked him up and it was a real person. And he led a fascinating life. And he had a month long but fascinating vice president. So I learned it in 1995 from watching the TV series The Critic.
Okay. So 1995, and how many times has that come up since 1995 that you've heard about it?
Well, I make a point of bringing it up pretty frequently.
I have never in my life either heard the name or heard that he was from out of state, and I don't even know that I would remember that.
Well,
I've never heard that.
Yeah, he was. It was the only time a vice president was ever sworn in outside the country, and Congress had to pass special legislation to allow him to be sworn in in Cuba. And it's interesting, and I think that to your point, I think a lot of people didn't know it, Diane, which I think goes to show you the poor job that our schools are doing in terms of teaching vice presidential history. So I appreciate you bringing that up, Diane. Thank you. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-WABC. By the way, look, I don't like to repeat rumors, but the general belief is that President James Buchanan was gay, and there's a strong belief among historians that William Rufus Duvain King was James Buchanan's lover. He was his gay lover. And so that's been put forward by a number of biographers, not one or two people, but many. Many. And the two men lived together, James Buchanan and William Rufus Duvain King, for 13 years, from 1840 until King's death as vice president. He died as a sitting vice president in 1853. So that is why you listen to this show, to learn about obscure vice presidents. Am I right? You know, if you get nothing out of this show, you will now be able to say, you know, who William Rufus Duvain King was. All right. We're going to talk. Let's do the $1,000 minute. If you want to answer 10 trivia questions in 60 seconds, be the seventh caller to 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. And then if you're the seventh caller, you'll have 60 seconds to answer 10 questions. And you will, if you're able to answer these questions correctly, win $1,000. And then we're going to talk with Douglas Johnson about UAPs/UFOs and what Congress may do differently on that subject going forward. Be the seventh caller, 800-848-9222. Meantime, you know what Congress is not doing anything about? They're not doing much about the levels of debt that we are seeing in this country. Well, there is something you can do about it. No, you can't get the country to stop going into debt. But there is a golden solution for the dangerously high national debt. We've seen all sorts of proposals to combat the national debt. But the one that seems to be the most popular is the Federal Reserve creating money out of thin air. We used to say they were printing money, but now they're just digitally creating money. So not only does this reduce the value of the dollar, but it leads to increased inflation at a scale we've never seen. What can you do about it? Gold. Gold is by far the best hedge against a weakening dollar and soaring inflation. The writing is on the wall. It's very clear. You need to take proactive steps to secure your wealth and your financial future. Don't leave your finances in the hands of the same people that messed this up in the first place. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. Gold is a hedge against inflation, and they can help you. They'll give you unbiased information based on your individual situation. Call 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635. Or you can go to the website LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com. All right. It is now time for
The Other Side of Midnight presents
It's the $1,000 Minute. Answer 10 questions correctly in 1 minute, and you could win $1,000. Here's your host, Frank Morano.
Ah, yes. Thank you, Chris Libertini. Let's meet today's contestant, James, in North Brunswick. Hello, James.
Hey, good morning, Frank. Big fan of you.
Oh, well, that's nice of you. Thank you. That's very nice of you to say. What finds you awake at this time, generally, James?
Well, I'm retired from the post office. I used to get up at 4 o'clock. And now I still get up at 4 o'clock. I listen to you until you and Julie until 6 o'clock, and then I go back to sleep.
Wonderful. Good. Well, we're happy to have you, and thank you for your service as a postal worker. All right, James, because you listen around this time, I'm guessing you're familiar with the game, right?
Yes, of course.
Okay,
yes.
So you're going to get 10 questions. You're going to have 60 seconds to answer them. The timer will begin as soon as you answer, as soon as I ask the first question. After I finish reading the first question, the 60-second clock will begin. If you get a question right, I'm just going to move on to the next question. If you get a question incorrect, you will hear a buzzer and you'll lose, but maybe we'll give you a consolation prize. You ready to go, James?
I guess, yes.
All right. What holiday will be celebrated on Thursday?
Thanksgiving.
What is my first name?
Frank.
What is the capital of the state of New Jersey?
Trenton.
Before co-hosting the WABC Early News, who was Juliette Huddy's co-host on WABC?
Curtis Sliwa.
Who was the only person to win more than two presidential elections?
Barack Obama.
I'm sorry. No, Barack Obama only won two. FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, won.
He won four. Yes.
But you did well. I got halfway there, James, and you seem like a great guy. So we are going to give you a complimentary The Other Side of Midnight cap. So hang on. Molly will take your information, and in deference and out of respect for your service to the Postal Service, we will be sending it in the mail. So thank you, James, and better luck. Better luck next time. I hope you'll continue to listen. All right, we're going to continue. We'll talk aliens coming up next, namely the legislation that Congress is considering to change how UAP sightings are reported. We'll get into it more with Douglas Johnson in just a moment.
The Other Side of Midnight presents The Midnight Files.
Desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride, filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you? Midnight in the desert, and we're listening. Ooh, we're listening to you.
Ah, yes. We are a program that spends a lot of time exploring the unknown. And I don't think there is a subject that has fascinated the American public more over the course of the last 70 years or so than UFOs. Now, recently, we've stopped referring to them as UFOs. A lot of people, especially in the government, refer to them as UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena. So, someone who has covered this subject, whether you want to call it UFOs or unidentified aerial phenomenon, more extensively than almost anybody is Douglas Johnson. He's a private researcher and a writer on unidentified aerial phenomenon who closely follows developments in Congress on this subject. Kind enough to join us early this morning on the radio. Douglas, thanks for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Frank.
So, Douglas, before we get into what Congress is doing, where do you do most of your writing on this subject? Are you associated with a particular publication? Do you write in books? Where do you do most of your UFO writing?
Most of my writing is actually on a blog, but also on my Twitter account, where my handle is D. Dean Johnson. That's two D's in a row. D-D-E-A-N Johnson, all one word. And I particularly track congressional events there, but also some other facets of the issue. There are many facets of this issue, as you know, and I'm by no means an expert on all of them, but I do keep close track of what's happening in Congress. on this matter, and it's quite a bit lately.
Yeah, no, clearly. I'm looking forward to hearing about it. Just so folks know where you're coming from, would you characterize your own characterize yourself as a skeptic or more of on the believer side that UAPs are extraterrestrial in nature?
Well, Frank, I became convinced when I was in high school that there were some things in our atmosphere that we didn't make. That was in the 1960s. So I've been following this intermittently for a long time. I still have that conviction, and I think there is a lot of evidence to support it. As far as the origins of these objects, that is a much more complicated question, and I think that they may have multiple origins. So it's a complicated question. There is a great deal of misinformation, nonsense, bogus claims surrounding this issue. And in part, that's because of the stigma that was attached to it back in the 1950s, quite deliberately, by the government for what they thought were good reasons at the time. But it's caused the field to be rift with bogus claims, and it's hard to separate the signal from the noise. That's one of the reasons why this congressional initiative that Senator Gillibrand has introduced is so important, to bring some serious government resources to bear on sorting out the signal from the noise.
All right, so let's talk about this. You were the first person to report on this. I'm shocked that I didn't see this in other publications until you started tweeting about it. What exactly is Senator Gillibrand, and I believe she's joined by Senator Rubio on this, what exactly is Senator Gillibrand proposing?
It is a robust measure and to require the Department of Defense and the intelligence community to create a structure and to mobilize resources to come to grips with this issue in a serious, sustained, and coordinated fashion. And that has not been the case in the past. Now, there has certainly been interest by some government agencies in some UFO phenomena over the decades since the late 40s or since World War II, really. But it has been disconnected, episodic, much of it, no institutional continuity, I believe. Stovepiping is the term one hears, where the data that one agency has is not shared with other agencies and not retained properly. So what they're trying to do here in this amendment, among other things, is get a single entity at a pretty high level in the Pentagon that would have the right and the authority and the resources to get data from all arms of the military and intelligence community on this subject matter, and to have the resources to go promptly into the field with technical resources and expert personnel where there is a flap or a series of encounters with this phenomena.
And just so folks know, how are UAPs reported now? What is the protocol, whether a civilian or a member of a military sees one of these aerial phenomenon? What's the current procedure, and how precisely would that change if this amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act gets passed?
Well, this amendment speaks to the government component, so it would establish procedures by which military personnel would have the right to report directly to this UAP entity, and the name of it is still a matter under discussion. But there would be an entity that would be in command of this, and pilots, for example, from all of the uniformed services could report their encounters directly to that entity. Because there has been a stigma attached to this for decades, where military pilots and sailors and others who had quite remarkable encounters in some cases, including quite a few involving nuclear weapons, could not report this up the chain of command. There was a stigma attached, and it could damage one's career. And one of the things that Senator Gillibrand and her colleagues are trying to do is get rid of that stigma and say this is now official policy. Not only are you encouraged to, but, you know, it's the will of Congress that this information be promptly processed and responded to. And when they get data, there's also a section of the bill called the Science Plan where resources, serious government resources, would be available to analyze it and to try to figure out some of what they're seeing. I was at an event 2 weeks ago where the director of national intelligence, when asked about this issue, said, "We don't understand some of the things we're seeing." And she's talking about things that they are seeing through multiple sensors, sophisticated sensors. She's not just talking about eyewitness reports from trained pilots, although those should not be lightly dismissed. But they have cases, quite recent cases, in which they have multiple sensor data and objects performing in ways that they do not understand.
And if people are just tuning in, we're talking with Douglas Johnson. He's a private researcher and a writer on unidentified aerial phenomenon, talking about this proposal by Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, which would amend the National Defense Authorization Act to change how the government handles UFO and or UAP, whatever terminology you want to use, how it handles sightings. By the way, Douglas, why was there a change in terminology? Why did they go from referring to them as UFOs to UAPs?
I don't know. I think some people felt there was such a stigma attached to the term UFO, it had become associated with so many things in popular culture. I think most of the popular culture stuff developed in response to actual events, actual sightings that people were having after World War II. And once it got into the culture, you know, a lot of things became attached to it. But so they thought they could sort of divest themselves of some of that by adopting a new term. I don't care what you call it, but there are things operating in the atmosphere that perform in ways that we don't understand. And some of this may be attributed to foreign technology, super drones or whatever in recent years, but there have been credible reports of this kind, and I'm talking about thousands of credible reports, going back at least to the Second World War, and there weren't any super Chinese drones, you know, in 1952 when these things were buzzing Washington, D.C., and so forth. So let me say a little more about this legislation.
Please.
Senator Gillibrand quoted, she tweeted on this yesterday. This is what she said. "Burying our heads in the sand is neither a strategy nor an acceptable approach. That's why I've introduced a bipartisan proposal to provide oversight and accountability over reports of unidentified aerial phenomena." End of quote. But listen to what so she is a pretty liberal Democrat, right?
Sure.
Listen to what Senator Marco Rubio, the prime co-sponsor of this measure, said in the summer of 2020, when he was still the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And I quote Senator Rubio, "There are things flying over your military bases, and you don't know what they are. And they exhibit potentially technologies that you don't have at your disposal. That, to me, is a national security risk and one that we should be looking into." End of quote. Now, I think they're saying the same thing.
Right.
This is one of the few issues right now in Congress where so far there is no hint of a partisan divide and none at all among the members of the Senate and House Intelligence Committees and the Senate and House Armed Services Committees, who have received repeated classified briefings from what is now called the UAP Task Force. It started out as an Office of Naval Intelligence operation in about 2017, and it's now been given this special status. And if this bill passes, it will be greatly elevated and have much more resources.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see at least something in Washington these days can be bipartisan. Douglas, do you think that this legislation would really make a difference? There's a lot of people in our audience, for instance, that believe that there's a lot of information that the intelligence community, the military, and many others in high-ranking positions in government, there's a lot of information they already have about UAPs and UFOs, and for whatever reason, they've refused to disclose that to the public. If somebody has that cynical view that the government has information on this subject and is withholding it, then what would this legislation actually do in practice?
Well, it very clearly, unequivocally expresses the will of Congress, if it's enacted, that all that information be, you know, the vaults be opened and all of it be provided to this central entity. Moreover, there is ongoing since May what's called an evaluation by the Office of the Inspector General of the Department of Defense. And that entity has authority to get into anything. And they are supposedly looking into the whole government operation with respect to this phenomena. I personally do not adhere to some of the conspiracy theories. For example, the Bob Lazar hoax, which a lot of people buy into, the guy who claimed to have worked on.
Oh, so you don't buy the Bob Lazar story?
I have delved into that in exhaustive detail, and it is a hoax from top to bottom.
Well, I'm going to have you come back on that show and maybe debate our friend Jeremy Corbell.
I'd love to do. Oh, he'll never debate me.
Really? Okay. Frank. Well, good.
He will never debate. He will never debate anybody who's well informed on this issue. They are hit and run artists. But listen, there's a lot of stuff like that. But I do not. I don't say there's no possibility that somewhere there's some artifact or some films and so forth that we should see and that the members of Congress should see. My own view is the government doesn't know what it knows because of what I said earlier. It's been balkanized. It's been stovepiped. There has not been continuity from generation to generation. It was nobody's official job to keep track of this stuff. In fact, it was regarded as career destructive to even show an interest in it. So I don't think the government has all the answers.
Interesting. Interesting. What is, as we stand here now, what is the status of this bill and of the Gillibrand amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act?
Well, to simplify, the bill itself, not the amendment, which so far is uncontroversial, but the underlying bill is jammed up in the Senate. It's they got a very late start for reasons I won't go into. They will get this bill enacted, I believe. It's been enacted for 60 straight years. It's one of the few bills that is really regarded as must pass. So I think before the end of the year, it will be enacted, but they may have to take some legislative shortcuts and so forth. But right now, there's a fair chance that this Gillibrand-Rubio amendment will be enacted. You know, there may be some changes in it in the conference committee and so forth, as you would normally expect. But it is a robust measure and certainly far bolder in Congress asserting itself on this measure than I would have predicted. It's ramping up quickly. And I think that there's going to be a lot more public attention to this issue in the years just ahead, and I welcome this.
So in terms of the timeline, we should know one way or another passage of this this bill and or the amendment proposed by Gillibrand by the end of the year?
That's right.
Okay.
It's not guaranteed, but they've pulled it off for 60 years in a row, and I think we'll see it. And the amendment has a fair chance of staying in. Now, you know, something could always go wrong. Somebody may come out of left field and object. And under these severe time constraints, it could be derailed. But the fact that it's even being proposed with this kind of bipartisan support, and I should have mentioned, the House has already passed a weaker version without dissent. 435 members of the House passed what we call the Diego provision, which is without a single objection in September. Now, Gillibrand-Rubio is three times as good, but the House provision itself was historic. It was the first time either House of Congress had ever adopted any bill addressing UFOs, UAP, whatever you want to call it, ever. So this thing is ramping up fast. You're going to see some people very disturbed by this, not in Congress, not the people who've seen the classified data, but, you know, like Doonesbury today makes fun of this. It says all the UFO reports are in the USA. This is silly. They relied upon a U.S.-based group that, of course, only collects reports from the U.S. and Canada. So they drew the conclusion, therefore, these things don't happen anywhere else in the world. In fact, there are very similar reports from all over the world. There have been for decades.
We're going to have to end it there, Douglas Johnson. I hope you'll come back. If people want to follow you on Twitter and your research and reporting on this subject, what is the best way for folks to follow you again? Give it to us one more time.
It's all one word. It's D. Dean Johnson. That's two D's in a row. D-D-E-A-N Johnson.
Wonderful. Yes. Wonderful. Yes. Dean, thank you. Douglas, thank you very much. D. Dean Johnson on Twitter. I appreciate the work that you've done on this. I appreciate you being willing to join me so early on the radio.
It's been a pleasure, and I'd love to come back and talk about Bob Lazar.
Okay, count on it. Count on it. Douglas okay. Johnson. Hey, we're going to do 15 seconds of fame next if you want to be heard on any subject for 15 seconds. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-WABC. We'll continue with your calls on any subject for 15 seconds next. 800-848-9222.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
See the tree, how big it's grown, but friend, it hasn't been too long. It wasn't big. I laughed at her and she got mad. The first day that she planted it was just a twig.
Bobby Goldsboro, Honey. Do you like this song? I always have. And I must say I was surprised when 15 years ago this song was named as the worst song of all time. I mean, you can like it, you cannot like it. But for it to be named the worst song of all time, I thought was a little, I don't know, a little excessive. But you can judge for yourself. Hey, if you've got 15 seconds, give me a call, 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC, because it's time for
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Let's begin with William in Westchester. Hello, William.
Hey, Frank. What New York needs is a station such as 880 and 1010, same broadcast format, but with honest political news. Needs a 24/7, 365.
Jeff in Suffolk County, hello.
I can't believe my senator, Gillibrand, and the other chucklehead in Florida can't stop illegal people coming over the border, but they want to check out flying saucers.
800-848-WABC. Fred is in Yonkers, hello.
Hey, Frank, I used to make my own Rorschach ink stains, roll them up in a ball, and throw them around the house. Then NASA came kicking down the door, and it was confirmed. They were unidentified Fred objects.
All right, Fred. Jimmy in Staten Island, hello.
Sizzle moron.
800-848-9222. Ralph in New Jersey, hello.
You know, the situation in Wisconsin reminds me very much of what happened in Charlottesville, Virginia. It wouldn't happen. The identity of the person was known right away. It seems to me like the Democratic Party wants to hide the identity of this individual who did this.
Thank you. And finally, Rocco in Selden. Hello, Rocco.
Yeah, Frank, I'm astonished to hear the name Bob Lazar. I can't wait for the debate with Mr. Johnson there.
Well, I'm going to work on it.